Has it happened to the Home Secretary? Regrettably, I fear it has. Regularly? Is that still what it's like out there? I'll take your calls on that. Plus, remember this interview.
Do you think Mrs. Parker Bowles was a factor in the breakdown of your marriage?
Well, there were three of us in this marriage, so it was a bit crowded.
That was the late Princess Diana talking to the disgraced journalist Martin Bashir. Now the sensational claim that that documentary, in part, caused the death of Diana. We'll look at that in more detail. Plus, how SATs are devastating for SEND pupils, S-E-N-D. And we'll look at other aspects of their education. And reselling event tickets for events such as Coldplay for profit will be outlawed. More details in the first hour of the show. News on LBC is next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, the Home Secretary has told LBC she's not prepared to let issues with the UK's asylum system continue to fuel division. Shabana Mahmood's been speaking after setting out sweeping changes to immigration rules in the Commons yesterday. They include fast-tracking deportations and limits on appeals. Some Labour MPs have condemned the plans as cruel, but Ms Mahmood had this message for those with concerns.
Look at the totality of the reforms. These are reforms that are underpinned by Labour values of fairness and contribution. They're British values as well. That's why I believe the country can get behind these reforms. But they also have compassion at the heart, because we want to disincentivise people getting on a boat in the north of France, and we want to incentivise people coming through new, safe and legal routes instead.
Sir Keir Starmer has insisted that he will lead Labour into the next general election. The Prime Minister has warned against wasting time on leadership rows following speculation of a coup to replace him. A poll's also suggested only a third of Labour voters want him to be the leader at the next election. James Matthewson is a former spokesperson for Labour. He's told LBC poor polling will be a concern for Sir Keir.
I'm not surprised. People are enraged. And I do think a lot of the people who we've lost, who say that, you know, they don't want to see Keir Starmer as Prime Minister anymore, I don't know if they're winnable back. There's been a transformation process that's taken place. Those people have realised that perhaps their politics don't align with what are supposed to be the core values of the Labour Party, which kind of plays directly into this asylum situation.
President Trump's welcomed the passing of a UN resolution approving his peace plan for Gaza. The Security Council endorsed key elements of its second phase, including the creation of a temporary stabilisation force. It also includes a transitional governing body, the Board of Peace, which will be chaired by Donald Trump. Hamas has rejected the resolution, though, saying it falls far short. US politicians will vote later on a bill calling for the full release of the Jeffrey Epstein files. President Trump backtracked on the issue yesterday, saying he would allow it if Congress backed the move. And the government is reportedly planning to ban the reselling of live event tickets for profit. Ministers are said to be drawing up proposals to outlaw sales above face value in a crackdown on touts. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen later at 96.75. It closed down 22 yesterday. The pound buys $1.31 and a euro 13. LBC weather, a frosty but dry morning for many. Some outbreaks of rain in the far northwest of England with a high of 9 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
I'm Linda, proud mum of Team GB's Emily Campbell. I know from watching my daughter through the years, the slog of training can get ugly. That's why Quaker is the perfect sponsor for Team GB. Because even though their porridge looks flipping ugly, it's the ugly stuff, the real stuff, that fuels us. Quaker, deliciously real, deliciously ugly, sponsor of Team GB.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, 4 minutes after seven, Tuesday, November the 18th, an outburst like almost like no other in the House of Commons yesterday, with the Home Secretary says she knows the challenges of a broken Britain, a Britain that, remember, is being torn apart or tearing apart, to use her exact language, because she is regularly, and if I was writing this, I would underscore that, regularly called an effing P-word. I have no doubt, regrettably, that poor woman has been called that on occasions, but I'm intrigued by the word regularly. If you are non-white, Is it regular you're called an effing P? Or, of course, the other word, an N, or whatever else it might be? It's time to get real in that conversation. We'll come to it in a few moments' time. Also, other people want to get real about the SATs. They are apparently devastating for SEND, SEND pupils. So says Motherland star Anna Maxwell-Martin, speaking earlier this year.
We need to help schools meet the needs of those children and, most importantly, include those children. We mustn't exclude children.
But I'm sure, and she's a star I enormously admire, we have to measure these children's attainment or lack of in some way. If you have a child with SEND or children with SEND, how should that be accomplished? In a related story, children should not be in school wearing ear defenders, Deputy Leader of Reform UK, Richard Tice.
The sight of children in classes wearing ear defenders, I'm sorry, this is just insane. It's got to stop.
I'm fortunate. Neither of my sons had to wear ear defenders. I didn't wear ear defenders, and neither did my two brothers, so I don't know. Is it necessary? It would appear very difficult to learn if one has to wear ear defenders. Again, you, as parents, will be able to tell me more. Plus, reselling event tickets for profit will be outlawed. And we're off to the nation's second city.
Agency workers have now voted to join striking bin workers in Birmingham on the picket lines for the first time. I'm LBC's George Ike with the latest.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Don't know about you. The more I see of her and the more I hear from her, the more I warm to Shabana Mahmood. I think with a bit of luck, and certainly Labour needs a bit of luck, they might have quite a punchy Home Secretary there. And how could she not be on the front pages of some of your newspapers this morning after that incendiary language, which obviously we'll play, we can't play you, but you know the words. And that's the key that I want to come to. My colleague Natasha Clark will tell you the whole story in just a second. But the key is the word regularly. She's responding to a question from a Lib Dem MP. I'll come to my colleague Natasha in just a moment. Just listen, and the word regularly.
Gentlemen, I wish I had the privilege of walking around this country and not seeing the division that the issue of migration and asylum system is creating across this country. Unlike him, unfortunately, I am the one that is regularly called a and told to go back home. It is I who know through my personal experience and that of my constituents just how divisive the issue of asylum has become in our country. And I do say to him, I wish it were possible to say that there isn't a problem here, that there's nothing to see and that it is all, in fact, just extremist right-wing talking points. But this system is broken.
The chuntering mumbling stops, doesn't she? When she uses those words? She talks about seeing division. Well, we can all see that. I can see that as a white man wandering around. But regularly, I'll come to you for your reactions, particularly if you do happen to be non-white, if you have to be of Pakistani origin, if you're black and those words are used with you. It's a conversation that possibly has to be had. Let's get into the background, of course, why we find ourselves here. Natasha Clark, LBC's political editor, who has overnight interviewed the Home Secretary, Shabana Mahmood. What's she been saying, Natasha? Morning.
Morning, Nick. Yes, quite a day for the Home Secretary yesterday, outlining, as we discussed, some of the toughest migration reforms that any Home Secretary, let alone coming from a Labour one and the daughter of immigrants herself. Shabana Mahmood faced down MPs in the Commons to announce these reforms, which could see families, children deported, people made to return to Syria and given thousands of pounds more in taxpayer cash, even have valuable assets like jewellery taken off them. She faced more than 2 hours of questions from MPs where she defended those plans as MPs lined up to call them inhumane, reprehensible, feeding division and playing into the hands of reform. And when I spoke to her late last night after a day of trying to sell her message, here was what she had to say to those MPs.
Firstly, I accept that not everybody will agree with these proposals, but I have not thought for a minute about what any other political party is doing or what any other politician has to say about any of these matters. I'm the Home Secretary of this country. I can see a broken system. When people complain to me about the asylum system, they're not indulging in fake news. They haven't read some misinformation on social media that's got in their head and now they're spouting some nonsense. What they're complaining about is a very real thing.
So what I'd say to my colleagues is, look at the totality of the reforms. These are reforms that are underpinned by Labour values of fairness and contribution. They're British values as well. That's why I believe the country can get behind these reforms. But they also have compassion at the heart, because we want to disincentivise people getting on a boat in the north of France, and we want to incentivise people coming through new, safe and legal routes instead.
She insisted that these new reforms would pass through the House of Commons, despite a growing rebellion of at least 20 MPs speaking publicly against them. But you heard her there admitting that not everybody would agree. She also pointedly refused to put any numbers on how many could be reduced. That will anger a lot of people. She said she hopes that there won't be a welfare-style rebellion of the likes we saw earlier this year. And Nick, of course, I asked her about the so-called jewellery clause, which could have seen necklaces and rings taken off migrants. She told me that taking heirlooms off people at the border was never going to happen. There was a bit of a climb down on that.
It's not the policy position of myself or the party. What we have said is, where people have assets and high value assets and can make a contribution to the asylum accommodation that they are receiving, they should do so. And the example I used in my speech in the House today is the case that I have in mind in making these changes. We had a case where a man was receiving £800 a month in income from his family. He also had enough money to acquire an Audi, and yet he was receiving free asylum accommodation whilst his claim was waiting to be heard. It cannot be right that people who are able to contribute to the cost of their asylum accommodation do not do so.
And finally, Nick, of course, as you've just played, there was quite a moment yesterday when the Home Secretary really did turn the air blue. She was grilled about racism in the country. She told MPs how she'd been called an effing P-word. I asked her later on how that made her feel and whether racism was getting worse on the streets of Britain.
It's horrible to be subject to racism. It's not new. There's a bit more of it around these days than there used to be, unfortunately. But what I'm reflecting is not just my personal experience, it's that of my family and many of my constituents.
Do you think it's getting worse?
I can only tell you what my own constituents tell me. I mean, as a constituency MP, I regularly hear from people in my own patch how worried they are about their safety and security in their own country, and how they can see this issue of asylum and migration more broadly causing division in our communities. It's why, as a constituency member of Parliament, as somebody who's the child of migrants herself, immigration is woven into my family's story. It's a story of how we came to Britain. It's why it's so important to me and such a moral mission for me that we fix this broken system.
Now, Nick, some of these changes do need a vote in the Commons to change the law. Shabana Mahmood insisted yesterday the system doesn't work, that it's only with people's consent and by repairing it can we open up more legal routes. But will MPs back this? It's arguably far more controversial than those welfare reforms in many ways. Sources close to the Home Secretary say the party might not exist in future if they don't tackle this, and that dark forces could follow. I think that's code for a Nigel Farage government. She tells me she won't need to U-turn. We've seen that so many times before in government. I guess we'll have to wait and see for that.
LBC's political editor Natasha Clark reporting 12 minutes after 7. Let's get straight to Daniel Sohage, who's specialist in international refugee law and protection and the director of Stand for All, and joining me now. Well, let's assume that most of this gets through. What will the impact be in your view? Good morning.
Oh, good morning, Nick. Thank you. Well, to be honest, quite a lot of it is actually already what the Home Office has in its own guidance. For example, if someone can support themselves, they aren't meant to receive Home Office accommodation, which is why majority of asylum seekers aren't in hotels. So some of it's going to have no impact at all. Some of it, though, and some of the more interesting, shall we say, proposals, actually, if you wanted to come up with something which was going to be as counterproductive, now obviously I'm going to say that I believe these are inhumane, and leave refugees in limbo. But whatever side of the debate you're on, some of the proposals that are put forward are absolutely counterproductive to the stated aims.
In what way?
So we already know that we have a huge backlog of people who are waiting on asylum claims. If you reduce the time so they have to then keep reapplying every 2.5 years, you're looking roughly, if that was implemented today, of about 67,000 people who would then be added to that backlog over the next year. So that increases the backlog and increases costs for the Home Office. Meanwhile, we already have a 20-year route for those who fall out of regularised status. So we know from that 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 route actually increases the risk of people working in the undocumented sectors being exploited. So it doesn't tackle the working element of it. So when you look through these policies, quite a number of them actually reinforce issues that the Home Secretary says she's trying to fix.
So how are people to be stopped boarding boats, risking their lives to cross the Channel from France?
Well, absolutely, we all agree we need to stop the boats and we need to tackle the gangs. You've got to do that in a sensible way. You need safe routes for people to come through. The ones that have been announced, there's this community support scheme. Well, the community sponsorship's been in place since 2016. It's not new.
You're very negative on everything that's been proposed. So what would you do if we could move to that?
What I would do is ensure that people can either apply for asylum in France or have a safer way to reach it, government-authorised route, to reach the UK to do it. So we process those claims fast. We then know who's coming in, which means we can divert attention to border force, or if there are crossings, we can tackle who's smuggling other things, like drugs or everything else.
Daniel Sirhage, thank you. You're a specialist in international refugee law and you're the director of Stand for All. We'll be taking your views and also speaking with Glyn Williams about his assessment of what we're hearing so far in Parliament. He, of course, was the Director General for Migration and Borders at the Home Office. That's to come. Also coming up after the news, trouble down on the farm.
The pressure really is on, but the Treasury are the ones that hold the key to the lock. And at the moment, they seem absolutely adamant they will not move.
Those revolting farmers are getting ready to rebel. We'll give you more details on that. Plus, saying ta-ta to the touts, reselling event tickets for profit will be outlawed. More later in this hour. Just turned 7:16, LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
The Home Secretary has told LBC she's not prepared to let issues with the UK's asylum system continue to fuel division. Sir Keir Starmer has insisted he will lead Labour into the next general election, despite speculation of a coup to replace him. And reselling tickets to live events at inflated prices look set to be banned by the government. LBC weather, a frosty but dry morning for many, some outbreaks of rain in the northwest, a high of 9 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. The Archies on the M25 anti-clockwise from Junction 21 for the M1 to just after Junction 19 for Watford because of an accident that's now on the hard shoulder. On the M25 clockwise, there's one lane closed. The lorry's having a tyre changed after Junction 10 for the A3, so the Archies. There are long delays on the A20 Sidcup bypass going into town. It's partly blocked between the Swanley bypass at McDonald's and Crittles Corner after an accident. In Stockwell, it's slow on the A3 Clapham Road northbound. There's a lane closed for emergency repairs at Stockwell Station. On the Tube, there's no central line between West Ruislip and Northolt. That's because a train has broken down. And on the trains, Thameslink have delays of up to 25 minutes and some cancellations between Blackfriars and Luton and between Blackfriars and Stevenage. That's after there were some electrical supply problems earlier.
This is LBC.
Welcome on board this LNER service from London King's Cross to Edinburgh. My name's Paul, your train manager today, and hang on, is that a Scrabble tournament in Court here? Yes, G with an X is a word. Right, we're cruising at 125 miles per hour. Same speed this lad next to me is typing. Someone's on a roll. The cafe bar's in Coach G if you fancy a brew. Or if you're mid-box set binge, just order through the QR code at your seat. We'll deliver it. So sit back and enjoy your journey. With LNER, it's freedom all the way.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
Waitrose presents...
And the main event.
One cook learns that love doesn't always shout.
Ain't that for me?
Sometimes it whispers.
I saved you the best bit, Dad.
Starring succulent number one free-range turkey bauble wrapped in dry-cured beechwood smoked bacon with cranberry jeweled pork stuffing and orange glaze.
Ooh, thanks.
Waitrose, the home of food lovers. Subject to availability and delivery slots available to order online and in-stores from 19th of December.
Have you ever wondered what a sandwich sounds like? Not much to it, is there? Unless, of course, it's a Walker's sandwich. Mmm, that is good. Now that's what a sarnie should sound like. Go all crisp in with Walker's. Delicious.
Train to Brighton with the besties. Immaculate vibes, as always. But I bet my ice skating is going to be pure chaos.
Oh, Em, you better hold my hand. Oh, I'm going up
No, styled it out. I've got this.
Last one to the other side buys the hot chocolate.
Back on the train. Only fell twice.
Low-key legend.
We have to do this every year.
Download the Southern Railway app to book tickets and save a third off group travel on off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Headlines in a moment, 19 after 7. Let's get straight to someone who very kindly has decided to be held over, the news as it's called, to wait to get on the air. Glyn Williams, former Director General for Migration and Borders Group at the Home Office, joins me now. Firstly, Mr. Williams, I hope I haven't disrupted your morning. Thank you for holding. Secondly, same question to you, effectively. If it gets through, or most of it gets through, what's the impact going to be in your view? Morning.
Morning, Nick. Thanks for having me. Well, I think that's the problem, really, because, you know, one of the big proposals here is that they can't get settlements until 20 years has passed. So the question is that going to deter them and dissuade them? I have my doubts about that. I mean, the key thing at the moment is that those that make it across the channel in the boats are claiming asylum, and 75% of them get asylum. So they have a legal right to stay. And for them, I think it's a matter of detail, really, as to what their exact status is, and how difficult family reunion is, et cetera, et cetera. I think that's their aim, and they're getting it. So I think until you address that key point, the pull factor is going to continue.
The reforms that we heard yesterday, the Home Secretary says, underscore British values, I'm quoting directly. Do you think they do?
Well, I mean, Britain's always prided itself on being a place where people can get sanctuary. And I think that generosity has been massively abused. And I think the whole international asylum system has just become a vehicle for illegal migration. And it's not a British value to promote illegal migration. That's not fair on anybody, including those who actually deserve sanctuary. So I think there needs to be a fundamental rethink of the system. And I do applaud, by the way, the Home Secretary's ambition and her political courage and what she's trying to do. I completely agree with that. I just worry that the actual detailed proposals, as opposed to the rhetoric, are basically a rehash of lots of things that have been tried before over the last 10 years and haven't worked.
Grateful for your time, Glyn Williams. Thank you. You were Director General for Migration and Borders Group at the Home Office. It's 22 minutes after 7. Very quickly through the headlines so we can play catch up with the clock. This is, of course, the front page of many of your newspapers, the Daily Mail. Racist abuse that means I know broken asylum systems must be fixed. Big picture of the Home Secretary Shabana Mahmood on the front page of the Daily Telegraph. Mahmood turns air blue in blast at Liberals. And there's the Daily Express. Steps in right direction, but is asylum plan doomed to fail? And the Guardian. Starmer faces Labour revolt over hardline asylum plans. It is, of course, front page of the LBC app. Home Secretary confident radical migration reforms will pass. Let's do one other website. Well, it's the Daily Mirror. I mean, this is extraordinary. So there has the Daily Mirror. Well, sorry, it's not extraordinary. The Daily Mirror has an interview with Keir Starmer. That's totally understandable. It's very much a Labour-supporting newspaper. But in the interview, he says that he will fight the next general election as leader of the Labour Party. Now, the minute you start saying that, it sows doubt in people's mind. Why would you, that would be like saying to you, I will be the presenter of this show next January. Why on earth? What's he saying? Is he under pressure? Is there someone? Is Henry Reilly greasing the steps to push him down? What is going on? Why is he feeling the need to say it? By the way, always watch Reilly. He's a very treacherous soul. So if we did Traitors at LBC, he would be Alan Carr. No question. Henry Reilly is the Alan Carr of LBC. But why on earth would the Prime Minister say that? But let's come back to the aspect that I found a remarkable day, actually, in Parliament, because it's not often that you hear the F word, or the P word, or then, of course, being, in a way, upbraided for the use of that language. But the word I want is the R word, regularly. Is it that bad out there? Dilip is in Leicester. You're on the radio. Hello. Good morning.
Hello, mate. First time caller.
Good to have you on. How's Leicester today? City of my mum's origin.
Pretty bleak. Bleak and cold.
Leicester's always been bleak, my friend.
Bleak and cold. I run a shop, so I'm already
open.
You?
Okay. Yeah. You're already... Oh, good on you. Good on you. Is it a sort of convenience store? Is that where you got the papers and the milk and the cigarettes?
Yeah.
Oh,
yes,
good
yes.
luck.
You've run it for 45 years, yeah.
Have you? Well done. Yeah. Right. Obviously, you are, I would imagine, of Asian origin in some sort with a name like
I'm Indian, yeah.
You're
I'm
an Indian,
came
sir.
Here, yeah, okay. Came to England in 71 from Uganda with a British passport.
Oh, was that one of Idi Amin? Sorry, was that part of the Idi Amin?
Well, he kicked everybody out in 72, but we left a year earlier than that.
Okay, okay. Right, so let's tread carefully. Obviously, you know, you'd be careful the language you use, but I hope it's not the case. You don't. Do you regularly receive abuse like this, Dilip?
Online I do, yeah. I've got quite a big social media page. I often get it. I've actually turned off messages sent by people I don't know because I used to get regular abuse on there. But it's fine, you know. I mean, we suffered that kind of, you know, we suffered racism in the 70s, which, it is what it is. You know, generally, everything's cool. But
let me ask you, you've referenced the 70s. Are we back to that level? Is it worse than the 70s? Is it not as bad? How would you equate it to give it some kind of reference?
I personally thought it wasn't as bad, but my daughter works in criminal defence law, yeah?
Yeah.
And she gets it very regularly, even to people that she goes out to defend or represent and everything. She gets it very, very regularly.
Okay. What do you make of the Home Secretary's stance?
I think it's a good stance. I mean, she surprised me. I mean, I don't trust Labour, particularly this Labour government, but her stance is pretty good. And I think that the language she uses in Parliament's wrong, the swear words and everything.
Yeah.
She did an interview with Beth Rigby.
Dilip, you came here with your family legally all those years ago. Uh-huh. What's your view of people trying to cross the channel on these boats and dinghies?
Listen, I've got no issues with people coming here legally, wanting to work, contribute. I'm a proud Brit.
Mm.
Nick, you can't imagine how proud a Brit I am. I've got the English flag, I've got the Union Jack in the show. Everybody knows it around here.
Brilliant.
But the illegal migration has to stop. Come here legally, no issues. No issues at all. Come here, work, contribute. You know, I see the old people on the estate here and how they're struggling at the minute. And it shouldn't be like that, man. They've been working in all the, you know, Leicester was a hub for clothing and shoes.
It was shoes, Barter, the old Barter factory. Do you remember?
That's right.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. And they're all paid in, and now you can see that they're anxious about things. And it tells in my business as well. To be perfectly honest with you, I can tell in my business.
All right. Where is your? Do you want to tell everybody where they come to Leicester now that your shop's open? Do you want to give me the name of your store? You don't have to, sir. It's up to you.
No.
You're all right. Okay, I'll leave you, Dilip. I really appreciate the first time call. Be well, sir, and good luck with your store, and I hope it prospers. More calls on this coming up. But let's talk about... Thank you again, Dilip. Let's talk about other matters. And there's trouble down on the farm, and farmers are coming to town, supported by some Labour MPs as well, talking about the so-called family farm tax as part of the 2025 budget. Now, for the past year or more, farmers across the country have been meeting with their MPs to raise concerns about the possible imposition of various financial policies. So let's turn to Simon Orson, who's spokesperson for Midland Farmers. He farms 700 acres of arable land on the Leicestershire, there we go again, and Nottinghamshire borders, and he's on his way to Westminster. For those who are trying to remember what the key concerns are, Mr. Orson, can you remind the listeners what you and your colleagues are so worried about? Good morning.
Morning there, Nick. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Yeah, basically, the main concerns are inheritance tax for the family farm and also just a lack of general support for farming. You know, we've got a government that's in there at the moment that just doesn't seem to be supporting farmers whatsoever. You know, we're talking about food security here. We're talking about national security, energy security. You know, this is huge. It's not just about farmers. This is about the whole country.
What do you hope you'll achieve?
Well, this is a big event today in that, you know, we've actually got Labour MPs coming out in support because these Labour MPs have seen the need for farmers and the need to support farming. So, you know, the fact that you've got Labour MPs that are willing to stand up against the government and stand up against Rachel Reeves's budget is humongous. Fingers crossed we can get more and more MPs to knock back the inheritance tax on family farms.
How real is the risk that many constituencies, and you'll be aware of this, Mr. Orson, many constituents at the last general election, rural constituencies, returned Labour MPs, and in some instances, the first time in decades. How real is the possibility that if they don't U-turn here, those people will be out of a job come the next election? You and your colleagues won't forget this.
Oh, I think that in terms of the Labour Party and their sort of decision to go down the inheritance tax route will have a huge effect on, the MPs for the areas. You know, they will not be back, because it's not just about farmers. We're talking machinery dealers, we're talking fert dealers, spray dealers. There's so many people connected to farming, especially within the rural communities, that, you know, you're not just affecting the farm, you're affecting a wider range of people.
Good luck to you and all your colleagues coming to town. Simon Orson, thank you. You're with Midlands Farmers. You farm 700 acres of arable land on the Leicestershire and Nottinghamshire borders. Paul, you'll be the next caller. I hope you can hold the other side of the news, because you do need to get to the news, and we'll be talking about this language that unfortunately is directed apparently regularly at our Home Secretary. Also after the news, story that really is a load of rubbish.
Once again, the bin strikes in Birmingham are escalating, with agency workers joining the walkouts and rubbish collections in the dispute reaching 100,000 tonnes. It's looking less like a white Christmas, more like a waste Christmas. I'm LBC's George Ike with the latest.
Plus, in the world of business, it's over and tout. Reselling event tickets for profit will be outlawed. Yes, the end of the touts. More on that in a minute or three. 7.30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, and LBC News Time, Dominic Ellis.
The Home Secretary has insisted to LBC that she can get her asylum overhaul through Parliament, despite unrest on Labour's backbenches. Under the plans, refugee status will become temporary and guaranteed housing support for asylum seekers will end. Sir Keir Starmer has warned the Labour Party against wasting time on leadership rows. He's insisted that he will lead Labour into the next general election and says he's utterly focused on tackling the cost of living. And the government is reportedly planning to ban the reselling of live event tickets for profit. Ministers are said to be drawing up proposals to outlaw sales above face value in a crackdown on touts. LBC weather, a frosty and dry morning for many. Some outbreaks of rain in the northwest. A high of 9 degrees.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
Myself seeing it, the issues in Crowborough and East Sussex, thousands, I think there are about 2,000 people on the street. The town's only got 20,000 people. It's like 10% of the places turning out every weekend to protest 600 people arriving, mainly men, on boats. They don't want it. And they hear, people hear these arguments of, oh, it's our colonial past, oh, you're creating a racist narrative. They go, no, don't care. I don't care. You cannot put these people here.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
Great to see you back at Specsavers. Okay, could you read out the letters on the wall for me?
Yep. D-E-A-L-S? Yeah, D-E-A-L-S. Deals.
Oh, right. Our Black Friday deals are eye-catching, but the letter chart's over here.
Oh, sorry.
At Specsavers, we've got all sorts of unmissable Black Friday deals, like up to £50 off one pair of designer glasses. Offer ends on 7th of December 2025. Conditions apply. Ask in store for details.
Waitrose presents...
I really fancy a mince pie.
One man's selfless journey from sofa to kitchen.
I'm getting up.
For a number one golden mince pie with juicy golden raisins, cherries and apricots, and zesty limoncello.
With some cream.
For a number one golden mince pie with juicy golden raisins, cherries and apricots, zesty limoncello, and a dollop of fresh cream.
Limoncello.
Waitrose, the home of food lovers. Selected stores subject to availability.
Hurry! Extra savings in Hillary's best ever Black Friday sale end soon. Until the 2nd of December, get an extra 10% off absolutely everything. That's on top of up to 50% off hundreds of made-to-measure blinds, curtains and shutters. Plus, control your blinds from anywhere with a half-price smart hub when you buy any electric blind. Don't forget, with Hillary's, measuring and fitting is always included. So get window wise and book your free in-home appointment today at hillarys.co.uk. Conditions apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
7.33, back to the conversation concerning that language deployed by the Home Secretary. Paul, I'm pleased to see you have held and you will be the next caller. But that's after we get into the world of business. And as I said before, as regards ticket sales, it's over and tout. With the news that reselling event tickets for profit will be outlawed. Yes, there's going to be a shake-up with that shake-it-off. Shaken Off by Taylor Swift. Christian May is editor-in-chief at City AM. He's got all the details. Christian, what's happening in that world? Good morning.
Good morning. God, you could write headlines, Nick. You could.
I did once. Not particularly well. That's why I got into radio.
All right. Well, you've absolutely put your finger on it this morning. Let's just give an example. If, and I don't know if this is your bag, you wanted to go and see Radiohead on Saturday, you might have been lucky enough to grab tickets when they were originally put on sale for £85 or up to about £200 for seating. If you fancy going along and you missed that first window of opportunity, you might find those now for up between £400 and £700 on Viagogo and StubHub, the main ticket resale websites and platforms. Well, perhaps not for much longer, because the government, we understand, is about to outlaw this. They had been thinking that the government was going to cap any resale platforms at about 30% above the face value, but it seems now the ministers are expected to limit the formal resale value at face value. Now, this might sound like great news. Some people might say, well, hang on a minute, it's a free market, it's a free country. If I buy a ticket and I decide I don't want to go, I can sell it on for as much as I like. And that may be the case, but it is also the case that there is now an entire industry dedicated to hoovering up tickets and then selling them again at inflated prices. You remember the Oasis gig, some of those tickets were going for over £4,000. The companies involved in this market, I mentioned them, Viagogo, StubHub, etc., are not best pleased about this. They said that these bans have been brought in other places like Australia, which has just pushed people into the black market and unregulated sites where there's no transparency, fraud is on the rise, no one has any recourse. So they say that these sorts of regulations ultimately fail fans. But the music industry and indeed other events, companies and football clubs even, are broadly in favour. So let's see how the news lands when it comes out later today. I would add that breaking news this morning, the Competition Authority, the Competition and Markets Authority, the consumer watchdog, has announced an investigation into 8 firms over their online practices. Now, that includes StubHub and Viagogo. Now, we don't have details yet on precisely what that is, but these rules have come into effect under their new consumer protection powers. But in addition to those resale websites that the competition watchdog is looking into for possible unfair practices for consumers, there are also the AA Driving School, BSM Driving School, Wayfair, Appliances Direct, and Marks Electric. Are all being looked at, and we will probably get more information as to what exactly the watchdog has in mind later on.
If we're talking watchdogs on the front page of City AM, you're looking at one particular watchdog. What's your main story there?
Well, we're looking at watchdogs that oversee the City of London, the main financial watchdogs, including the Competition and Markets Authority, but principally the Financial Conduct Authority. And you'll remember the Chancellor made a big song and dance about cutting the number of regulations and, by effect, I suppose, cutting the number of regulators, though I believe that when I see it. We report on the front page today exclusively new figures that show that there are about 5,000 more regulators in the City of London now than there were in 2016. That includes another over 2,000 individual regulators at the Financial Conduct Authority over that time. Now, the watchdogs themselves will say, well, look, our workload has increased, there are new laws, the landscape's got more complicated, and indeed we've had to absorb quite a lot of things that used to be overseen by the European Union. Well, be that as it may, these figures are going up and up and up. The Financial Conduct Authority's staff costs have gone up over 50% in that time. So as the Chancellor calls for regulation to be eased and thinned out, I suppose we'll be watching to see if that actually translates to any reduction in headcount at these regulatory bodies. I rather suspect it won't. They will find other forms of work for themselves, I imagine.
Lastly, let's talk a little bit about protection from banks towards us, towards the customers. What are we hearing?
Yes, for a long time now, there has been the deposit protection scheme overseen by the Financial Services Compensation Scheme, which will protect £85,000 worth of bank customers' savings should your financial institution fail, should there be another disastrous run on banks, as we saw in 2008, £85,000 worth of your savings would be protected. That figure hasn't really changed. It actually went down a bit and was brought up a bit about 5 or 6 years ago, but it hasn't really changed, whereas inflation, of course, has been rampant. So it has been decided by one of those other regulatory bodies that that figure is now going to rise to £120,000. Now, I haven't done the maths, but I imagine you take into account inflation over the last 8 or 9 years or so, it probably just keeps things steady. But it means that should your bank fail, up to £125,000 worth of whatever it is you have with that institution will be protected.
Christian, thank you. Christian Mayer, Editor-in-Chief at City AM, taking us almost to 7:39. A couple of emails then, Paul, you're on the radio. This one comes, you are so close. clever. You are so clever. Joel says, Bic pen for sale, as in biro or whatever, £1,000, comes with two free Oasis tickets. An old trick to get around laws you cannot uphold. You're so smart. Why didn't I think of that? By the way, have you got Oasis tickets? No, I'm only kidding. Anthony says, your caller Dilip, was came on before the news, is a great example of someone who's completely integrated. What a great bloke. Anthony in Sunthorpe, I hope you're still listening in your store in Leicester, Dilip. Paul is in Malazion, which is, of course, in Cornwall. The language deployed by the Home Secretary, do you think it's regularly, unfortunately, people hear this sort of talk? Good morning.
Yeah, she might have gone over the top, but I think she was only saying what she probably experienced. I'm not sure it's that common anymore. But what I'd like to say is that they're gaslighting us by pretending that we're getting cooperation from the French. The French aren't cooperating us. We're giving them about £500 million a year.
Exactly right. Over a number of years, over 3 years. Go ahead, yep.
But I was reading the Sunday Times that they launch these boats in the canals in French, and then they come round to the beaches. They only have to put a couple of ribs in the water and stop the boats before they load up on the beaches.
They've no interest in doing that, Paul.
No, I know. But we're told that they're cooperating with us, we're giving them money and this, that and the other. Come out and tell us that we meet them halfway over the channel and give them the life jackets back.
I know.
It's a farce.
It is, and I said last week or the week before, we've actually got to turn them back, and we're going to have to risk the biggest fight on earth between us and the French, and we're just going to take some of those dinghies back and put them back on the shore at Calais. That's what we have to do.
Yeah, well, that's what winds me up. Well, stop giving them the fishing licenses in British waters. We have to say to the French, you can stop this. If you don't stop it, we're an economic war. Because The French want rid of them. Why can't they be honest and tell us that?
They can't because it suits them. They'd rather take our money and do nothing. And interestingly, Paul, of course, we're going to tell other nations who won't take people back that they can't have visas to come here. But meanwhile, as you say, they can come fish. The French can come fish here as much as they want. Last word from you on that idea.
Well, why do they? It's the British politicians who are telling us that they're cooperating that winds me up.
Paul, thank you. D, is it, have a safe day in Cornwall. D in Croydon. D, the language used by the Home Secretary, is it appropriate? Is it right? Is that the reality out there? Good morning.
Good morning. I think it's difficult for people to know and understand fully unless you've been there. Mm. And my parents are immigrants to the country many years ago, illegally. Mm. They'd come here, and it was very difficult for them. And unless you know somebody that's been through it, it's very easy to think, you know, to anybody listening that, you know, oh, these people shouldn't be coming here. And but if your family's in danger and you've got no options, I think lots of people would want to do the same. So I think, you know, I just wanted to alert people that, you know, it's not always the way it is. And
ask which country your parents came to UK from?
Yes, from Uganda,
right,
during Idi Amin's time.
Okay, yeah.
And, you know, they had to drop everything and come. And, you know, if there's a real danger, it's really stressful as it is. And, you know, to sort of have lots of sort of people thinking wrong of you and things, you know, it's really difficult. I know that things have to be changed. And, you know, on the flip side of it, we have somebody that we were helping who was homeless, and he's a Polish man. Mm. And he has recently been deported back. Asylum claims were failed. But he was playing the system a bit because he said, they're giving me £3,000 to go back, and he said after that I'm allowed to come back in 2 years, so I'll do that. So I understand that side of it too, but you know, I'm one of these people that, you know, I believe that, you know, we need to share the world with everybody, you know, kindness to everybody.
Can I just ask you, Dee, do you think your parents were happy they came here, or in a perfect world they'd have never left Uganda, Dee?
I think that, to be honest, right now, they say that they were happy in Uganda, but they say that if this hadn't happened, they didn't come here, they wouldn't be happy as they are today. So it's the best thing that happened to them when they were treated badly in Uganda. So things worked out for the better. But, you know, yeah. Like I say, you know, you've got to share the world with everybody. And I always say, you know, even everything deserves a chance, you know.
Absolutely agree with you. Dee, best wishes to your parents. Thank you. Tony's in Kilmarnock. Tony, your experiences. Good morning.
Oh, thank you, Nick, for taking my call. All right, that's okay. I live, in a multi-diverse community in Kilmarnock. So my neighbor, who is an Asian, was one of his child was playing with my son, and they were playing.
I'm sorry, sir. Just say, please don't use any offensive language. I'm just a little nervous as we go there. But go on to playing with your son.
Right. I'm so nervous as well as I'm talking to you right now. And right now, as a black person, I feel we are on the last of the racism. We enjoy it every day. This is nothing new under the sun.
Every day, sir.
What I'm trying to say, not regularly, daily, on basis, you know, because it's a long story short, not only daily, like monthly you can experience this twice, or you can experience this, you know, yes. To me it's more like daily if you count the hours, you know, there's 24 hours in a day. Yes. So what happened is, sorry, just bear with me, I'm a bit nervous, I'm shaking right now.
There's no need to be, you know. Relax, you're doing brilliantly, please don't be nervous, sir, you're absolutely fine, please go ahead.
It was so brave for me to come on radio right now, you know, because I've been enjoying this for years and years. Right, my son, who is now 11, was playing with an Asian child, and the parents came from Saudi Arabia. They are British citizens. My son is British. My son was born in Glasgow. So my son was told that, you know, they were playing. Then the kid says, "Where were you born?" And my son said, "I was born here."
Yeah.
And the Asian child said, "No, you can't be." Right. And my son said, "I'm British." Said, "No, you can't be British. Sorry, you can't. You're an African."
Right.
"You're an African." And my son came home rushing. He was crying. And I said, "What's going on?" And he said to me, "Dad, why is that people we are being hated by? Oh, why? What's going on? Why?"
How old is your boy, Tony? How old is
that? Yeah, he's now 11 now.
11, right.
Yeah. So now we you know... Me, you know, it comes from the parents. I myself as a black person, you know, I've seen this. This has been, you know, going on for years and years. Black people are the last, and we are non-violent people. We know we do as we are told. We contribute to the system, but unfortunately, the system, you know, doesn't appreciate us. For me, when I tried to, you know, to speak with the father, my wife stopped me. My wife said, "No, I mean, you don't need to. Otherwise, it will be confrontational. You don't need to confront anybody. This will be chaos for us." You know.
Well, I don't know why you were nervous. You told your story brilliantly. I have to leave it there only because I need to get to some news headlines. Do please give my best wishes to your son. That's appalling language, Tony. You did a great job, so thank you. Do please call me again now. You've done it the once. It'll be that much easier. We will return to this subject. Also coming up later in the show, time to see off the Sats.
We need to help schools meet the needs of those children and, most importantly, include those children. We mustn't exclude children.
That's Anna Maxwell-Martin, if you're struggling to recognise the voice. She's from Motherland and other shows, of course, speaking earlier this year about the need to call for a more inclusive approach to send SEND pupils when it comes to exams. We'll look at that in more detail. 7:46, LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
The Home Secretary has insisted to LBC that she can get her asylum system overhaul through Parliament, despite unrest on the backbenches. Despite speculation over his future, Keir Starmer insists he will lead Labour into the next election. And it's reported the government's planning an outright ban on the resale of event tickets above face value. LBC weather, a frosty but dry morning for many, some rain in the northwest, a high of 9 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. There are long delays on the M25. Clockwise, one lane is closed after junction 10 for the A3 because a lorry is having a tyre changed. On the M25 anti-clockwise, it's very slow from junction 21 for the M1 round to junction 19 for Watford after an accident earlier. There are long delays on the A20 Sidcup bypass going into town. It's partly blocked because of an accident before Crittle's Corner. It's heavy in Stockwell on the A3 Clapham Road northbound. There's a lane closed at Stockwell Station. That's for emergency repairs. On the Tube, there's no central line between West Ryslip and Northolt. There's no service on the Piccadilly line between Rainers Lane and Uxbridge, and on the trains, Avanti West Coast have delays of up to half an hour between Euston and Milton Keynes Central. That's because of problems with the overhead lines. That's also affecting some London Northwestern services.
LBC.
Train to Cambridge and then all aboard the paddleboards. A little bit different, should be fun. All wobbly, all wet.
The wetsuit's a good look on you, Steve.
Oh, actually, I feel very relaxed.
George is up the river cam without a paddle.
Train home, that was such a laugh. I think I might even have a new hobby. Download the Thames Link Railway app to book tickets and save a third off group travel on off-peak journeys. Thames Link Railway, where every stop is a story.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
How's the business going?
We're busier than ever, but struggling to get the staff we need.
Recruiting can be such a distraction. We gave Job Centre Plus a try, and they've really helped us out.
Really?
Yeah, it was dead easy. We got our own employer advisor, Julie, who helped advertise our jobs, shortlisted candidates for us, and let us interview at the Job Centre. We've hired some great people, and Job Centre Plus really took the hassle out of it. And there was no fee.
Brilliant. That's straight on my to-do list.
Find out more at business.gov.uk/recruit. Eligibility criteria apply.
When BP asked me to read the voiceover for their new Wild Bean Cafe ad, I thought I knew what to expect. But when they told me I'd be reading the script next to a mountain waterfall, on horseback, strumming a harp, in a hailstorm, naked, ow, 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 ow. Well, that was wildly unexpected. Just like Wild Bean Cafe having a freshly ground signature espresso blend for everything from Americanos to flat whites in a fuel station. Wowzers. Wild Bean Cafe, only at BP. Subject to availability at selected BP stores only.
Great to see you back at Specsavers. Okay, could you read out the letters on the wall for me?
Yep. D-E-A-L-S? Yeah, D-E-A-L-S. Deals.
Oh, right. Our Black Friday deals are eye-catching, but the letter chart's over here.
Oh, sorry.
At Specsavers, we've got all sorts of unmissable Black Friday deals, like up to £50 off one pair of designer glasses. Offer ends on 7th of December 2025. Conditions apply. Ask in store for details.
Oh! Hey, Mum, looks like someone's coming through the back gate.
Oh, it's not Barbara from Judo again, is it? I can't listen to any more about her new boiler.
Or about the time she saw a ghost in her downstairs loo.
No, it's okay, look. It's just a dodgy-looking bloke in a hoodie.
Oh, thank God.
Hey, you, clear off. We know Judo.
Always Know is at your door with Ring's new 4K security cameras. Available now at ring.com and Amazon.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
It's 10 minutes before 8. We'll come back to the Home Secretary and her speech in the House of Commons in a moment. Now, we've talked before about the government's target to hit 1.5 million homes by 2029. They can't afford to be stationary about it, so they're going to be improving homes near railway stations. Here with more details, Housing, Communities and Local Government Secretary of State Steve Reid joining me now. Good to have on, Secretary of State. A little more detail on this idea regards railway stations. Morning to you.
Good morning, Nick. It's good to be on your show again and talking about housing again, because we have a housing crisis in this country. Just coming in the car this morning, freezing cold out there, frost on the vehicles, but there are people sleeping in shop doorways, and indeed the numbers sleeping rough has doubled over the 14 years of the previous government. And you'll know, you'll have people listening to this show in their mid-late 30s who are still living at home with their parents because they, unlike me when I was their age, can't afford to find somewhere that they can rent or buy. All of that is because we're not building enough homes. So a couple of weeks ago I was on your show talking about how we're going to speed up house building in London. Now we're looking further afield at other opportunities for development. And you've got stations that are close to cities and towns where there are employment opportunities, but where there is very, very limited development. And the opportunity is there to get homes built. The public transport links are already in place, so you don't have to wait for a new train line or a tram line or infrastructure of that kind to be put in place. You can get the homes built. So we'll be working with councils who take the decisions to bring in the developers and give a default yes to applications for house building that are in line with the parameters that we're outlining this morning.
Do we have any idea the number of homes that this might unlock, Secretary of State?
It's very hard, Nick, to put an exact figure on that because it will depend on how many applications developers bring forward. We expect it to be in the tens of thousands. I can't tell you whether that's at the upper or lower end or actually even higher, but it does make sense to me, and I think it makes sense to other people, that if you've got a train station that is commutable from where the jobs are and there's not much development around it, why would we not build the homes there? It doesn't tend to be prime, pristine land. It makes sense to people intuitively that that's a place where you could build homes and develop communities. It's only up to 800 metres around the station, so you're not looking at huge encroachment onto the land around the station, but there's such opportunities, I think we'd be daft not to do it.
And is this only in what's called brownfield sites, or would it apply also, Secretary of State, to the Greenbelt?
Well, it's in some cases it's brownfield a brownfield. In some cases, it's effectively grey belt. So you're sitting on a train, you go through a station. There's a lot of light industrial around it, or unused areas that have been concreted over. That's what we're talking about.
I won't ask you numbers. I do that regularly, and you've always got them down. But come on, how are we getting on with trying to hit 1.5 million homes? That is a heck of a task. You're like the Manchester United manager. You've been saddled with quite a task here, Mr. Reid.
More like Arsenal at the moment, I hope, Nick. But I mean, you're not going to see the numbers now. I know the numbers are low. It's about 2,300, I think, over the last year, which is too low. But it takes time for the changes we're making to work through, because the developer has to put in an application, the council has to approve it, then you get spades in the ground. So you are going to see the increase further on in the Parliament, but I'm announcing new stimulus packages every few weeks at the moment to get the country building. We want to see those spades in the ground, we want to see the cranes in the sky, because I want to end the housing crisis so that young people today, like I could when I was younger, can find somewhere they can afford to rent or to buy.
You mentioned Arsenal. One of the team's most high profile fans is of course your boss, the Prime Minister Sir Keir Starmer. Why does he find it necessary in an interview with the newspaper today, the Daily Mirror, to say our lead Labour into the next general election? Why even put fuel on those who are doubting?
Because I think the journalist asked him the question, so he was answering it. But I mean, the reason he was being asked it is that politics, as we all know, is very volatile at the moment. People have been experiencing a cost of living crisis for years. The previous government left all of our public services broken, and I think it's understandable. The public are not going to give this government the benefit of the doubt until there is change they can feel. So we're starting to see that happening. We're cutting the NHS waiting lists. Here I am on your show today talking about how we're going to end the housing crisis and get the country building. But people want to see hard evidence of that, and it will take time. So we'll keep on focusing on dealing with the cost of living crisis, fixing our public services. When we get to the next election, the British public will take a choice.
Well, it would seem in some instances they're taking a choice now regarding Sir Keir Starmer. You'll be aware of the polling done by The Times that shows almost half of Labour voters want him out of Downing Street by the time of the next election. How do you respond to that?
Well, I think it's the same point I just made. People are desperate for change, and it takes time.
Well, yes, they are. They're desperate for change. Desperate for change of Prime Minister.
They're desperate to change things like, well, there's a cost of living crisis that, we had 14 years where prices were going up faster than wages. But we did. We did.
I see. When will those 14 years? Let's use Arsenal as an example. If Arsenal got a new manager, he's not going to say, well, honestly, I've been in 15 months, I've not been able to change the team. How many more months are we going to hear from Labour? It's our inheritance.
Well, we are starting. So look at the NHS. We've got 5 million more appointments in the NHS. It's cutting waiting lists. Is it enough? Not yet. We need to keep going. But we are seeing the change now, and that will feed through into results. And I hope by the time of the next general election, Labour's back at the top of the table again, Nick.
All right. Lastly, Shabana Mahmood, yes. An extraordinary speech. Really, the passion and emotion and determination shone through. But you are, of course, Community Secretary. So if you have a colleague who is, I quote, regularly being the victim of language such as that, the F word and the P word, particularly the P word, as Community Secretary, what are you going to do about it?
Well, I mean, the kind of abuse, personal abuse that Shabana has been subject to is wholly unacceptable.
I agree, and you are Community Secretary, so what are you going to do about it?
Well, I mean, she's in charge of the policing, and there's hate crime laws as well. But as Community Secretary, I work very closely with Shabana to look at what is fueling community divisions in our communities. And I'm afraid right now we know from knocking on doors, speaking to members of the public, there are high levels of concern about the levels of illegal migration and asylum hotels. So what Shabana was talking about yesterday is how do we start to tackle that problem. We were all elected as Labour MPs on a manifesto commitment to secure our borders, but we're going to do it in a way that is fair and tolerant.
How confident are you? I don't need to cite to you some of your Labour colleagues who are expressing considerable distress and displeasure with the ideas. How confident are you that Shabana Mahmood will get these ideas through?
I am very confident that she'll get it through. As I said, we were all elected on a manifesto to secure our borders, and that's what Shabana is doing. But we have to end this vile trade in human beings, where these traffickers are putting far too many people on dinghies, some of which sink in the English Channel. It's not acceptable that that goes on. I saw a statistic earlier on, which is so painful to read. 14 children drowned in the English Channel over the last year. We cannot allow a situation to continue where people's lives are in danger like that. So those people who have no right to be here shouldn't come in the first place, but we need more safe and legal routes for those who have an entitlement to come into this country and seek sanctuary to get here. And we've always been the kind of country that offered that to people who needed it.
Great for your time this morning. Thank you. Steve Reed is Secretary of State for Housing, Communities and Local Government. The default position will be yes for homes that could be built near railway stations. This is to speed up regeneration. We could be talking, difficult to put a direct number, of tens of thousands of new homes. Thank you for your input on that. All right, if you're calling about our conversation with Shabana Mahmood and that use of language, we will come to that later, but the music means we must move on. And do you remember this interview?
Do you think Mrs. Parker Bowles was a factor in the breakdown of your marriage?
Well, there were three of us in this marriage, so it was a bit crowded.
That famous, or probably infamous, interview with Martin Bashir, you'll be hearing from the author of a new book, who says, in part, that led to the death of Princess Diana. More on that. Plus, if you have a child, send special educational needs. The idea that SATs are too tough for those pupils, we'll look at that in more detail. And in a related story,
the sight of children in classes wearing ear defenders. I'm sorry, this is just insane. It's got to stop.
Can you explain to that politician why they are so vital? Those stories and more follow the 8 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 8 o'clock, the Home Secretary has told LBC she's determined to steer her asylum system overhaul through Parliament despite growing resistance. The government's been forced into U-turns on several policies in recent weeks after objections from Labour backbenchers. Shabana Mahmood has defended her plan, saying the current system is out of control and unfair.
I know the British people are generous, open and tolerant. I want to make sure that we unlock the full extent of that openness and tolerance and generosity. And we will do that by having a system that has order and control at its heart, and that then enables us to grow and bring more people in through safe and legal routes into this country.
You can watch and read more of Shabana Mahmood's interview on lbc.co.uk. Sir Keir Starmer has warned Labour against wasting time on leadership rows. He's insisted he'll lead the party into the next general election and says he's utterly focused on tackling the cost of living. It follows speculation of a backbench coup to replace the Prime Minister after next week's budget. President Trump has welcomed the passing of a UN resolution approving his peace plan for Gaza. The Security Council endorsed key elements of its second phase that included a transitional governing body, the Board of Peace, which will be chaired by Donald Trump. Hamas has rejected that, though, saying it falls far short. Developments near train stations will receive a default yes as the government looks to meet its promise of building 1.5 million homes. Another proposal includes allowing ministers to intervene if councils in England intend to reject applications. The plans are due to be outlined later. The Housing Secretary Steve Reed has just told Nick that unlocking planning rules can further boost the economy.
You've got stations that are close to cities and towns where there are employment opportunities, but where there is very, very limited development, and the opportunity is there to get homes built. The public transport links are already in place, so you don't have to wait for a new train line or a tram line or infrastructure of that kind to be put in place. You can get the homes built.
Reselling tickets to live events at inflated prices looks set to be banned by the government. Ministers are said to be drawing up proposals to outlaw sales above face value in a crackdown on touts. Separately, eight businesses are being investigated by the Competition Watchdog under its new powers to look into online pricing practices. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 reopened at 96.75. It closed down 22 yesterday. The pound buys $1.31 and a euro 13. LBC weather, a frosty but dry morning for many. Some outbreaks of rain in the far northwest of England with a high of 9 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Tonight's EuroMillions jackpot is £119 million.
I think that deserves a whoop whoop.
Thank you, faraway person. Get in tonight's Euro Millions draw. Play on app.
Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. 3 minutes after 8 on Tuesday, November the 18th. Testing time for children, indeed. Too much testing time. The suggestion that the school tests are harmful, particularly for children with SEND needs and issues. And we'll talk more about that campaign that really is getting underway today. In other news,
agency workers have now voted to join striking bin workers in Birmingham on the picket lines for the first time. I'm LBC's George Ike with the latest.
Plus, remember this interview from 1995.
It was a symptom of what was going on in my marriage. I was crying out for help, but giving the wrong signals. And people were using my bulimia as a coat on a hanger.
The late Princess Diana speaking with disgraced journalist Martin Bashir on the disgraced television show Panorama. You'll be hearing from the author of a book who effectively links that interview to the death of the princess within a couple of years, of course, of actually appearing on that TV show. And we come back to that story concerning our Home Secretary and what she has to endure.
Unfortunately, I am the one that is regularly called and told to go back home. It is I who know through my personal experience and that of my constituents just how divisive the issue of asylum has become.
And sadly, it would appear the Home Secretary is telling some home truths. We'll return to it later in the show.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
A campaign has begun, supported by, among others, the Motherland star Anna Maxwell-Martin. Parents calling for controversial SATs tests for children with special educational needs and disabilities, SEND, to be scrapped. She says navigating the broken system with her two children has been a gauntlet of horror. She signed an open letter along with 22 parent groups. So not 22 parents, 22 parent groups. Warning the Education Secretary, the current tests actively harm children who struggle through no fault of their own. The letter says the large proportion of SEND youngsters who fail their SATs, which, by the way, you need to know is a standard assessment test, spend their entire year six convinced they are not clever enough, close quotes. Year six is, of course, the year before they go up to big school, so they're going to be 10, approaching 11. But what of this campaign? Let's turn first to a head. Maria Kemble is executive head at St Edmunds and St Joseph's Catholic Primary Schools in Suffolk and joins me now. What are the special challenges that are posed to you and your staff with primary school children who have SEND? Good morning to you.
Morning. We actually have a SEND unit attached to one of my primary schools. So we are very well aware of the difficulties that those children face when it comes to testing. We don't make them take part in the tests. We disapply them. I think it's much easier for us to do that when they're in a SEND school. I think it's harder for those children in a mainstream classroom who may be disapplied, but actually their curriculum experience in Year 6 is largely geared up to taking the SATs at the end of the year and therefore having to sit with their peers whilst they may be practicing or they may be being taught specific information for those tests, and then they're very much isolated and set apart.
What are the issues that a SEND child faces then as others around him or her prepare for those tests?
Well, I think it's just that feeling of they're doing something different, therefore what's wrong with me? Why am I not doing that? The frustration of seeing things that they can't actually do, that, you know, they're self-aware enough to look at what they're doing and what their peers are doing and to see that it's different and to feel somehow inadequate as a result of that.
Are these children then to be tested in any way at all, or what would your recommendation be?
I think you have to look at what the purposes of the tests are for. And, you know, the original purpose of the SATs test was not about individual children. It was about judging how well a school is doing, the standards within a school's population rather than individual children. And I think labelling children at 11 as either having met a standard or not is wrong. We, you know, that isn't necessary. We ought to have a model which is about success, not constantly making SEND children have to prove what a failure they are. And that's kind of what the testing system at the moment does. I think parents who have children with SEND know that actually very often, in order to get any support and help, they're constantly on a deficit model. And what we ought to be doing is celebrating what those children can do and what they do bring to our communities and our schools, rather than making them feel not part of it.
In practice, how do you and your colleagues do that at your schools?
We have different systems where we're actually looking at the whole child. We're not just looking at their academic success. We are also looking at their success across the wider curriculum, their personal and social development, and also looking at their starting point and therefore celebrating where they have got to from perhaps a, what is a very individual need and therefore an individual baseline.
If these children aren't assessed at a SAT level when they're in year six, what year can they start taking tests, would you suggest?
Some of these children may never access what we would term as tests in the way that the vast majority of children do. There are alternative pathways through school and to measures of capability. I think, you know, we have to be realistic about that. If I'm perfectly honest, nobody ever asks you when you go for a job when you're 20, how did you get on in your year six SAT? Nobody's really interested. And therefore, I think far too much pressure is being put on children, young people and their families around a test which is very much about really the school, not really about them as an individual.
All I'm going to say is, though, of course, if you go for a job when you're 20, to use your words, and you're successful, there are going to possibly be times of pressure when you're going to have to respond and react. If you've, and I don't know, I'm not a teacher, and I'm certainly not a head teacher, if that child has never been tested at age at year six, at GCSEs, how is he or she going to respond when the pressure suddenly starts to bite?
I think you'll find that SEND children experience pressure every single day of their lives, and so do their families. They are constantly under pressure to perform, to conform, to fit, you know, into a mould that society says we should.
But how will they respond? You know, I need that report by Tuesday.
Well, I think you'll find that actually with the right support, the right strategies in place, our children do very, very well. But sometimes maybe the measures that we're using are not the right measures for everybody, and we have to recognise that. We should be an inclusive society. These people are part of our community, and we shouldn't be actually making it, the barriers for them are hard enough, we shouldn't be making it harder.
Maria Kemble, you're Executive Head at St Edmunds and St Joseph's Catholic Primary Schools in Suffolk. Thanks very much for your input. 8:10. Let's bring to the conversation Aileith Harley Roberts, who is a mother to a child. Now, tell me a little bit, we're talking about your daughter, is that right? Good morning to you. May I call you Aileith? Is that all right? Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Yes, Aileith is lovely, thank you.
Who are we talking about?
Talia, my daughter, who is 15 and she has Down syndrome.
How has the school system served her to date?
She attended her mainstream primary school locally to us, where she thrived with an individualised curriculum and with excellent support. She didn't sit SATs in year six because it wouldn't have been a very appropriate way of assessing her capability and her strengths. And obviously that was kind of positive in that sense for Talia, but actually in terms of, as Maria was saying, you know, her experience of year six, that was obviously very different to her peer group.
Okay.
She's now in a partnership setting, which is a mainstream school with a specialist teaching base.
What's a partnership setting mean, Aileith? What does that mean?
So it's a mainstream high school, but it has a specialist teaching base within it. So Talia is taught with a smaller class size with other pupils with special educational needs and disabilities.
And is she able to sit sort of end of year exams, or that's not appropriate for your daughter?
She doesn't sit end of year exams. She will work towards a differentiated exams at the end of year 11, but they will be very much tailored to her capability and to her needs. And obviously the teaching that goes alongside that is also differentiated and tailored towards the needs of the young people in that class.
How confident are you that this arrangement that's been made is regularly checking your daughter's levels of attainment in various subjects?
Well, there are different ways of assessing, children's capabilities and their strengths that don't necessarily need, a test or an exam situation. So there is ongoing kind of checking on pupils' development. There are assessment systems in place which don't necessarily follow, the national curriculum in the same way. So as Maria was saying, there can be more individual ways of looking at where people are and judging it on their own individual strengths, rather than a standardised kind of set of exams.
Lastly, what do you think the Education Secretary, what do you think the government should do about this then, Aileth?
I think we need to look at a more holistic way of, I don't know even if assessing is the right word, but certainly for those pupils who have special educational needs or disabilities, and possibly not even a diagnosed need, but that there's a more holistic way of looking at how can we assess and celebrate where people are, that means that people aren't put under, undue pressure and stress.
Thank you for all your input. Aileth Tarley-Roberts, best of luck, as you've chosen to give me a name. I wish Talia the best of luck with her education. We'll come into calls on that. Vicky, you'll be the first caller. The actor or actress Anna Maxwell-Martin says, too many children leave primary school disengaged, carrying only a badge of failure for their efforts. That's appalling. No child should have to, particularly age 11. That's appalling. Does it mean the children will never be tested? And what if they then go into the workplace? How will they then adapt? We'll explore that a little bit more. Also, after the news.
Once again, the bin strikes in Birmingham are escalating, with agency workers joining the walkouts and rubbish collections in the dispute reaching 100,000 tonnes. It's looking less like a white Christmas, more like a waste Christmas. I'm LBC's George Ike with the latest.
It's 8:15. LBC News headlines then. Dominic Ellis.
The Home Secretary has told LBC that she's determined to steer her asylum overhaul through Parliament despite growing resistance. Sir Keir Starmer says he'll lead Labour into the next general election despite speculation over a coup to replace him. And developments near train stations in England will receive a default yes as the government looks to meet its promise of building 1.5 million homes. LBC weather, a frosty but dry morning for many. Outbreaks of rain in the northwest, a high of 9 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. There are long delays on the M25. Clockwise, it's taking around 40 minutes to go from Junction 8 for Reigate to Junction 10 for the A3 after a lorry had a tyre changed earlier. There are queues on the M25 anti-clockwise from Junction 21 for the M1 to just after Junction 19 for Watford after an accident earlier. There are long delays on the A20 Sidcup bypass going into town. It's partly blocked before Crittles Corner because of an accident. There are queues on the A3 northbound in Roehampton. There's a lane blocked before Roehampton Lane because of an accident. On the Tube, there's no service on the central line between West Ryde Slip and Northolt, and on the trains of Anti-West Coast and London Northwest, then have delays of up to half an hour, and also cancellations between Euston and Milton Keynes Central. That's because of some problems with the overhead lines.
This is LBC.
Welcome on board this LNER service from London King's Cross to Edinburgh. My name's Paul, your train manager today, and hang on, is that a Scrabble tournament in Court here? Yes, G with an X is a word. Right, we're cruising at 125 miles per hour, same speed this lad next to me is typing. Someone's on a roll! The cafe bar's in Coach G if you fancy a brew, or if you're mid-box set binge, just order through the QR code at your seat. We'll deliver it. So sit back and enjoy your journey. With LNER, it's freedom all the way.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973 LBC.
We had our smart meter installed a year ago, and it's made things so much easier. Not having to submit meter readings or having to deal with estimated bills is great.
A smart meter sends meter readings direct to your energy supplier.
It means you get accurate bills, not estimated bills, and you don't even need an internet connection. Call your energy supplier to request a smart meter today.
Real testimonials voiced by actors. Eligibility may vary.
How's the business going?
We're busier than ever, but struggling to get the staff we need.
Oh, recruiting can be such a distraction. We gave Job Centre Plus a try, and they've really helped us out.
Really?
Yeah, it was dead easy. We got our own employer advisor, Julie, who helped advertise our jobs, shortlisted candidates for us, and let us interview at the Job Centre. We've hired some great people, and Job Centre Plus really took the hassle out of it, and there was no fee.
Brilliant. That's straight on my to-do list.
Find out more at business.gov.uk/recruit. Eligibility criteria apply.
Amazon has increased funding for employees to £3,000 a year every year for career development. Like Juliet, she's now a trained technician. And to her, the sound of machinery in need of repair reminds her of how far she's come. In 2 years, she's landed her dream job, providing her with valuable skills. That's up to £3,000 every year for career development at Amazon. Eligibility conditions apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Time to stop those harmful school tests. 19 minutes after 8. Vicky, you'll be the first caller. Let me just read. A lot of you are talking about what this means in employment. David says, these people would be used to... This is his view. These people would be useless in the real world. I can't believe what I'm hearing. You can't build a business around all of these individual holistic strengths. Same subject. This comes in from Andrew. I don't know much about the subject, but there does seem a risk schools could move children without medical conditions into the SEND category to boost their SAT results. Clive Balchin in Rossendale. I'm bemused by what seems to be an amazing increase in children with SEND needs. My concerns, what will happen to all these children when they enter the workforce? Well, that is what I'm saying, and please don't think I'm in any way trying to knock these children. I'm not, but if we're not going to test them at 10, and we're not going to test them at 16, we're not going to test them at 18, when they, and I appreciate what the head teacher said, they are tested every day, but in the workplace, is it fair? Have we equipped them for it? Ian in Sunderland, if successive governments didn't cut SEND funding and specialist education placements, then we might not have kids sitting in mainstream education, also having to wear ear defenders. Ear defenders were coming too later. Vicky's in Cranley. Vicky, let's talk about what you take from what this campaign is trying to achieve. Are they right? Good morning.
Hi, Nick. Yes, I mean, there is a certain degree of correctness in what they're saying. However, you know, when I was at school a long time ago, I was never tested at 10, 11, 12. My first test was the O-level.
You didn't have an 11 plus exam?
No, I think I just went to a state comprehensive, so
right, okay.
It wasn't the case. But, you know, and I fitted nicely into the workplace. I run my own business and I'm also a teacher two mm-hmm. days a week. Mm-hmm. My daughter... She's assessed in other ways, like your previous caller says. There are so many different special needs tests and ways of assessing the children and to see where they're at. It doesn't necessarily need to be that set format, I think.
But we are hearing from one mum that their child doesn't take end-of-year exams.
Yes, and I believe that's the case. I'm working currently in a mainstream school and there are children here. But the environment is very inclusive and, you know, these children will try their best to do exams where possible. But as we know, exams aren't the answer to everything.
They're not. Of course they're not. But how else are we going to check if a child is attaining a certain level of education in a subject?
Because, like the previous caller said, on a day-to-day basis of how they're communicating, how they're grasping the work that you're teaching. A lot more courses these days. I'm teaching a vocational course, which is assessed every week in the classroom. So, you know, it's learning as we go. And I think that's the way education is going now.
And if all these changes came in, you're confident that we can, when children leave education and they want to get a job, they'll be able to perform in the workplace?
I'm not sure.
We can't write them off, can we, Vicky?
No, we can't. We can't.
So isn't that where possibly a degree, and I don't mean like the exams that I sat, which were brutal. I don't mean that. But then we need a degree of rigour, don't we?
There's got to be a... Yeah, OK. There's got to be a degree of testing. But maybe, like the lady before said, a more of a holistic way and looking at the...
But you can't do that in the workplace, can you? If you're, let's say you're employing, I don't know, 50 people across two different offices on two... You can't be holistic to every single one, can you?
No, you can't. No. The reality is these young people probably wouldn't end up in that kind of job.
Well, what will they end up?
I don't know what they'll end up doing.
But we've got to have every ambition for them, haven't we? We don't want a child... What was this quote again? Too many children leave primary school disengaged, carrying only a badge of failure for their efforts. Right, well, we don't want... We want these children to think they can aspire to anything, whatever they want to be.
I mean,
well, we're not going to do that by constantly allowing them not to take tests, are we?
No. However, my daughter left year six. She's now in year nine. She left year six full of confidence and, you know, she'd achieved the best she could in her primary school. And that was purely due to the head and the management structure of that school and how they got the results for the children. And she didn't sit an exam, but she was at a special needs school. She was, you know, she couldn't go to mainstream school, but she left and she started her secondary school with confidence. And
good.
You know,
that's what we want.
All we can hope.
That's exactly what we're after. I'm totally with you, Vicky. Thank you. More calls on that in a moment. Let's go to other stories. The one I've mentioned already. And the bin strike just got bigger in Birmingham. LBC's report in Birmingham. George Ike joins me with all the details. George, morning.
Nick, good morning. This vote means that agency workers will now be joining the picket line from the 1st of December, as well as extending the mandate for the current striking bin workers to carry on their industrial action beyond the 7th of May elections next year. And by that point, if a deal's not been struck, that will have been 422 days of all-out strike action on the picket line. For some context, this dispute began back on the 11th of March this year in a row over pay and conditions. But the latest vote means workers who are directly employed by Birmingham City Council will be joined on the picket lines by agency workers employed by Job and Talent on the refuse contract. Lead negotiator for Unite in this dispute, Onai Kassab, told me it's a significant moment.
We know that agency workers are going to continue joining us. I think they're going to see the result today. They're going to see that there is a union that's willing to fight for agency workers against bullying, harassment, blacklisting, and to demand permanent jobs for these workers. And I think they are going to be joining the union in very, very large numbers.
Sharon Graham, the General Secretary of Unite the Unions, accused the council of spending a fortune on a dispute it could have resolved by agreeing a deal with workers, as well as describing the workload of those agency staff members who will now walk out as being unsustainable. Birmingham City Council then said that they're disappointed it hadn't been resolved and blamed Unite for rejecting all of their offers. But they say their contingency plan is working and there is a small number of agency staff in a separate dispute. But they are planning to continue a minimum of one collection per household per week as part of their contingency plan. And you know what's coming now, Nick. You know, it's been a while, but we're back. They have collected 100,000 tons of waste in the last 6 months.
Titanic? No. A jumbo jet? No. What have we got, George?
I've got three for you. So, that waste equates to the weight of every London bus on the road 15 times over.
Oh, that's clever.
Four Eiffel Towers worth of rubbish in weight.
Yeah, like that one as well.
Or my absolute favourite, the weight of 1 billion adult mice.
LBC's George Ike reporting. We will offer some kind of therapy for George. These demands are getting too much for the lad. George, thank you. 8:26 is the time. George is being tested there as to how he's going to keep to you the amount of rubbish that's on the streets of our second city. But are we testing children? Send children too much? Matt's in Nottingham. Matt, your view. Good morning.
Morning, Nick. Good morning. Yeah, I'm ringing on behalf of my daughter. She's seven. She's recently been diagnosed ADHD, but she's inattentive, so she's not the hyperactive side of it. She's more calm, but she struggled with social situations. She struggled with exams and stuff like that. Because they do tests. So she's seven. She's in year three.
Yeah.
They do a badge test. Before she got diagnosed, I had to have a meeting with the school, and they agreed to take away the time aspect of it because she couldn't process the information quick enough. So she was struggling. She's passed the test. She knows all the information. She just can't work under a timed regime. She can't. Same with me. I'm the exact same. I went to university, Nick.
Yep.
I've got a degree.
Yep.
I'm now a lorry driver. I'm doing well in life, but I've got dyslexia. I suspect I have got ADHD and autism. I'm not going to go for the test. I can't bother with that.
What are your ambitions for your daughter?
For her to be able to be able to take all the same tests, to do everything that all the other kids, but just have adjustments for these kids, the kids who need it, to be able...
But what children can get extra time in exams, yeah, and can get, laptop.
And I want to help her as well. Not a scriber, because my daughter, she struggles with writing, but she's learning, she's getting better. I want her to be able to do it herself. So by the time she finishes school overall, if she wants to go to uni, she goes to uni. But I want to point out, Nick, I'm a reform voter. Well, I was, but this is what's worrying me now. So I'm not voting at all now. When the general election comes, if the policies get stronger on this, on the SEN, about taking funding away and about making it harder for them, I am not voting them because I'm not doing that towards
my
daughter.
Who would you vote for, Matt?
No one. I won't put my vote anywhere because none of them, except for West Street, like, he's brilliant. He is absolute brilliant.
Yes, okay, so a Labour Party led by Mr. Streeting is something that you would entertain voting for?
Yes, completely.
All right, okay. Will you wish her the best of luck, your daughter, and well done to you, sir. And lorry driving is a hell of a job. It's an incredible responsibility, and as I always say, they are some of the best drivers on the roads. If you ever drive at night, the way those men and women are clattering up the road, they do an incredible job. Good luck to you. Chris, in Leeds. Chris, what do you make of this conversation? Are there too many tests? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. I find it incredibly interesting, and I get people's perspective on this when,
yep,
when people are thinking about it.
Yeah.
They're taking it from a place that they have a child and they want the best for the child.
Yeah.
But the world doesn't operate that way. We're 2025, and yeah, right now, we just don't work that way. I run a commercial business, a commercial department, and I can't holistically be individual to everyone's feelings within the workplace. And the way I have to operate is I have to judge it on a certain... incorporate my policies and the business's policies as to, are you able to adhere to the role that you're doing? Tests aren't always the answer for every single child, but we definitely 100% can't take them away. It doesn't make any sense to not test children and to gauge as to where they're at. Now, maybe there are different types of tests we can do, like personality tests, how they can be taught better, but teachers are exactly there to teach each individual child. They, yes, they're meant to teach a classroom, but they're meant to teach individuals as well.
When you hear, and these are, and I understand these campaigners, they say there needs to be holistic treatment of the people, and then when they get in the workplace, they need to be holistically valued. What is the reality to you, for you, Chris, having to run teams or run staff?
You can. If you run teams and you're a manager and a mentor and a leader, however you want to look at it, what's really, really important is that you do day by day. The idea is to get results from the people in which you work with. So to get them best results, you do take the feelings and the personality into account. But the reality is, if a job needs to be done, and a job does need to be done, whatever that might be in any type of function, they still have to prescribe to the policies and expectations that are set upon them. How does somebody get through the interview process if they've never been tested or gauged? Because straight away, the alarm bells in my mind are going to be saying to me, but I'm sure to other employers.
Yes, I just think you're,
I don't know who's going to be able to cope under the pressures.
I think you're just being honest, Chris. You're speaking for many bosses, and you're brave enough to say it, and others want to say it, but they're too intimidated. I think that is the reality. We want these youngsters to have every possibility, not to put them into a second stream for the rest of their lives. Chris, safe. I can tell you're in a vehicle, safe driving, and thanks for all your input. In a related story, in the next hour, we're going to be debating this.
The sight of children in classes wearing ear defenders. I'm sorry. This is just insane. It's got to stop.
And after the news, do you remember this interview from 1995?
Yes, I did inflict upon myself. I didn't like myself. I was ashamed that I couldn't cope with the pressures.
Well, that was Princess Diana speaking to the disgraced journalist Martin Bashir on the disgraced Panorama show on the disgraced BBC. And a book says that you can almost trace from that interview the ultimate emotional decline, and then, of course, sad death of the late Princess of Wales. That's coming up. You're listening to Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC, the 8.30 news, then read by Dominic Ellis.
Home Secretary Shabana Mahmood has told LBC that she's determined to steer her asylum system overhaul through Parliament, despite growing resistance. The government's been forced into U-turns on several policies in recent months after objections from Labour backbenchers. Sir Keir Starmer has warned Labour against wasting time on leadership rows. He's insisted he'll lead the party into the next general election and says he's utterly focused on tackling the cost of living. And developments near train stations will receive a default yes as the government looks to meet its promise of building 1.5 million homes. Another plan includes allowing ministers to intervene if councils in England intend to reject applications. LBC weather, a frosty but dry morning for many. Start breaks of rain in the northwest, a high of 9 degrees.
On the latest episode of The News Agents.
The Home Secretary, Shabana Mahmood, seems to have won over an unlikely admirer, one Tommy Robinson. Is that going to help her win the case on tightening immigration rules, or is it going to frighten Labour MPs to death?
Get the latest episode of The News Agents with Emily Maitlis, John Sopel and Lewis Goodall. Listen or watch on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
A message from TfL.
I saw him in the local news a few days after. His name's Rakesh. They had to put him into a coma just because I didn't look again at that turning. He had 2 kids. How did I not see his bike ahead of me? Well, I didn't look again. He didn't make it.
Drivers, take another look, not a life. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
Chase is the digital bank you can count on.
How so?
Because you get 1% cash back on your grocery shop.
Like on prosciutto?
Yeah, prosciutto.
And seaweed crackers?
Sure, those two.
Hang on, what about rotisserie chickens?
If it's in your grocery shop, Chase has got your cash back. Join today and get 1% cash back on debit card spending on groceries, fuel and everyday transport. Chase, see what your money can do. 18 plus UK residents eligibility applies. 1% cash back for your first year. Maximum £15 per month. Exceptions apply.
At Amazon, over 50% of deliveries now come with less packaging or with no added packaging at all. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep. Where you chat with friends, where your neighbour's daughter practices guitar, and where we deliver your new noise-cancelling headphones in the manufacturer's packaging. Ah, much better. Reduced packaging from Amazon. We're delivering change where it matters. On your doorstep. Based on 2024 UK and EU Amazon packaging data.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
8.35. Now, if over at the BBC they think the headlines are getting bad, they're about to get a lot worse with the publication of a book in a couple of days, which effectively takes the link from an interview, we'll pay you a tiny reminder of that, to the sad death of Princess Diana. I take you back to that interview with Martin Bashir. Remember, this was, if news is anything that makes you say gee whiz when you hear it, see it or read it, this was more than a gee whiz, it was that moment.
It was a symptom of what was going on in my marriage. I was crying out for help, but giving the wrong signals, and people were using my bulimia as a coat on a hanger. They decided that was the problem. Diana was unstable. Yes, I did inflict that upon myself. I didn't like myself. I was ashamed that I couldn't cope with the pressures. I just hurt my arms and my legs. And I work in environments now where I see women doing similar things, and I'm able to understand completely where they're coming from.
Do you think Mrs. Parker Bowles was a factor in the breakdown of your marriage?
Well, there were 3 of us in this marriage, so it was a bit crowded.
Now, I appreciate some of you weren't even here. You weren't even born. This is 30 years we're going back. But if you think Bob Villain or the President Trump story was big, you ain't seen nothing like this. And it is all chronicled in a new book, Dianorama: The Betrayal of Princess Diana, by journalist and broadcaster, former BBC staff, actually, Andy Webb, who joins me now. Andy, someone listening now who's 25 doesn't really get the relevance of what you and I remembered. Can you paint a picture for them? Morning.
Morning. Absolutely. Well, you said the book published in a couple of days, and that is exactly 30 years, of course, since the interview went out. As you say, you've got to be 30 to have even been alive when it did go out. But I have been convinced from day one of my inquiry into this, that this is actually history. This is really, really, really is history. When the BBC starts, if you like, messing with kings and queens, then they're messing with history. And that is why this story, this scandal, has not gone away and will not go away. And that is why I have kept at it to try and find what actually went on and indeed how it was covered up. And I've got to say to you, Nick, I think the BBC would say, who cares, this journalist, you know, go away. When Diana's family, her brother, and I have to say specifically her nephew, starts to express their thoughts that they want to know at last what went on, then the BBC might start listening.
How was this culture of deceit allowed to flourish at the BBC, Andy?
It was allowed to flourish. I would say it was prospered by a certain small group of... nurtured by a small group of executives in the BBC who quite clearly early on, and we're talking 30 years ago, very early on saw that if what had been done to Princess Diana fully emerged into the daylight, they would have been gone in half an hour. They'd been sacked. They'd have been gone. I mean, the sort of cull that we've seen as a result of Trumpgate would have been nothing, trust me. So that is why the culture of cover-up and secrecy was brought into being. How it was allowed to prosper is a very interesting question, and the answer could be very, very long. I'll try and put it this way, that the inquiry such as it was, that was held into what Martin Bashir had done, has been described by Lord Dyson as woefully ineffective. I take extreme issue with that. I think what the BBC did at the time was remarkably effective because what they did not emerge for a quarter of a century until 2020 when I was looking at this and it first began to emerge. So it was a very effective cover-up. The cover-ups, the good ones, are the ones that work.
So this has been something you've been working on for what, more than 5 years? For a listener now who's interested in this, without giving away, obviously, your main storylines, what are some of the most unsettling or disturbing facts that you've unearthed?
I think for me, what was so disturbing, and I've got to say just really, really depressing and disappointing, is the degree to which the BBC has been completely unwilling to get its arms around this scandal, and actually explain once and for all what happened, who was it, or how was it that key documents, the smoking guns, were removed from the archive. They might also want to answer why Tim Davie himself will have signed off on spending more than £1 million of your money, my money, license fee money, £1 million, to stop me seeing certain emails. I've got to say to you very quickly, when I heard that Donald Trump is coming, you know, sending his lawyers in, sending the legal juggernaut in, a wry smile passed my lips, because a year ago, the BBC was sending their £1 million legal juggernaut heading my way to stop me seeing documents under freedom of information. So really, many, many things, I think, in the book that one people might think are scandalous. Did Martin Bashir do this? Did he do that? But that is the big thing for me, that the BBC, this organisation we should love and we should trust, can do it and keep on doing it.
Lastly, the answer to this question, Andy, is ask them, but what do you imagine they're covering up, that this goes to the very top, that there's even more skullduggery than you've been able to unearth?
Well, quickly, I mean, I was able to discover that four key smoking guns had gone missing. Now, we can put a number on that because by happenstance, there were copies of those four documents which turned up elsewhere, so we can identify them. But I'm absolutely of the belief that there'll be another half dozen, another 10, another 20 that haven't turned up. What I would urge the BBC to do is do what every incoming US president promises to do, and that's open the files on JFK. Well, let's open the files on Dianagate. And we've only got so much time, Nick, but I wrote a little story last week the BBC has now, if you like, fired its own official historian so that this story, well, and as a result, this story cannot be written by the BBC. Now, when you need to fire your historian because the situation is so toxic, you've got a problem.
It's been well reviewed. It's out there as of Thursday. Diana Rama, Andy Webb, thank you for your time. Diana Rama, The Betrayal of Princess Diana, the author, Andy Webb, who put a number of years in at the wheel at the BBC, has now spent all this time. It's out, as I say, on Thursday, £22. Penguin, Random House is a publisher. Diana Rama, you've probably seen it. It's been featured in a number of newspapers. Andy Webb, thanks for your time. 8:42, let's go back to the conversation we're having about SEND and the testing times that shouldn't be testing the children. Avneet in Blackpool. This is about your daughter, is that right, Avneet? Good morning.
It is, yeah. Good morning.
What are you going to tell me?
So, my daughter's currently in Year 6. She's got autism, ADHD. She's only just recently been diagnosed. I think it's such a shame that children actually need to have some sort of diagnosis in order to get any help within a school.
How else are we to find out if a child needs help, though?
I think that's completely, totally up to the school. And my daughter used to go to a private school. And obviously, she's been there since she was 2 years old. And we found private school was best for her at that time because I didn't find any local primary school that I thought was fitted her needs best. Now, obviously, that school has massively let her down. She used to be in a classroom with loads of noise and they used to shut her in a storeroom cupboard and they used to say, calm down with the noise and then when you can deal with it, you can come back out. Obviously, that wasn't acceptable at the time because no. I think the school obviously hasn't seen to her needs. They weren't for autism, ADHD or any SEND difficulties a child has. My daughter has assessments each year since she's moved to a new school. And they've actually assessed them, all children, at the beginning of the year. And then they assess them at the end of the year. And then they kind of find out a little pattern as to how they've gotten on, whether they've dipped, whether they haven't dipped. And
So your daughter's going to be around 10. What are your ambitions for her?
My ambitions are to do whatever her heart desires. At the minute, she wants to actually open up a dance school for those and send children. Right. And that is her ambition in the future. I own a business and I employ people in this business and I get CVs through. And there are some people who are extremely intelligent on paper but actually cannot work a shift because they just haven't got common sense. My daughter is very physical based. I have autism, was never diagnosed as a child. But actually now, looking at her and looking at myself, I feel like that was me at the time. Mm-hmm. And I think there are so many children out there that are...
What does school need to do to equip your daughter with the necessary skills and talent to run a business such as a dance school?
I actually think children nowadays need to go out and do a little bit of work experience, if I'm honest with you. I don't think it's actually sitting behind a desk and learning things.
The maths. I mean, if you're running a business, obviously you're going to know that you want to be taking in more than you're putting out, more than you're spending. If she doesn't have a grasp of maths, how would she do that?
Well, you can have a grasp of maths by owning a business. We have a convenience shop and my children work behind the counter sometimes, taking in money. People have no common sense. Children nowadays have no common sense of money because everything's on a card. So regardless, even if they are in a school education, there's times when they actually don't go through money in a massive chunk. It is very small little topics because that's how a school system works. You don't talk about money over 6 months or 7 months. So it's very difficult to learn about business. Yes, when they go into senior school, secondary school, they go more in depth into it. But even then, actually having that ability to work experience, to go into a workplace and have that experience and actually put those skills to test is more important than sitting at a desk.
Good luck with your daughter. I hope she achieves everything she wants, Avneet. Thank you. We will continue this conversation. Then in the next hour, we'll come back to that extraordinary speech in the House of Commons from the Home Secretary, Shabana Mahmood.
Unfortunately, I am the one that is regularly called and told to go back home. It is I who know through my personal experience and that of my constituents just how divisive the issue of asylum has become.
Home truths from a Home Secretary who says she's regularly called the effing P word. Didn't she mean frequently? Regularly? That's like every Tuesday at 9 o'clock it's time. Frequently, surely. We'll look at that in the next hour. 8:46 LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
Home Secretary Shabana Mahmood's told LBC that she's confident her asylum reforms will pass the Commons despite backbench unrest. Sir Keir Starmer says he'll lead Labour into the next election despite speculation over a coup to replace him. And reselling tickets to live events at inflated prices looks set to be banned by the government. LBC weather, a frosty but dry morning for many, some outbreaks of rain in the far northwest, a high of 9 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. There are queues on the M25 anti-clockwise. The exit slip road at junction 29-4 Romford is partly blocked because a lorry has broken down. It's still very slow on the M25 anti-clockwise from junction 21A for St Albans to junction 19 for Watford after an accident earlier. There were long delays on the M25 clockwise from junction 8 for Reigate to junction 10 for the A3. That's after a lorry had a tyre changed earlier. There are queues on the A20 Sidcup bypass going into town. It's partly blocked before Crittle's Corner because of an accident. It's slow in Roehampton on the A3 going into town. There's one lane blocked before Roehampton Lane after an accident. And on the trains, Avanti West Coast and London North Western have delays of up to 40 minutes and cancellations between Euston and Milton Keynes Central. That's because of problems with the overhead lines.
This is LBC.
Save the Children is inviting you to the UK's most spectacular Christmas party. That's right, Christmas Jumper Day is back on Thursday the 11th of December. And Save the Children want every school and workplace in the country to get silly and donate for a seriously good cause. It couldn't be easier. Sign up, get your jumpers out, and this December join the millions of people creating lasting change with Save the Children. Sign up now at christmasjumperday.org.
Call Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060973, LBC.
Waitrose presents...
And the main event.
One cook learns that love doesn't always shout.
Ain't that for me?
Sometimes it whispers.
I saved you best bit, Dad.
Starring succulent number one free-range turkey bauble, wrapped in dried cured beechwood smoked bacon, with cranberry jeweled pork stuffing and orange glaze.
Ooh, thanks.
Waitrose, the home of food lovers. Subject to availability and delivery slots, available to order online and in stores from 19th of December.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 991234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
When BP asked me to read the voiceover for their new Wild Bean Cafe ad, I thought I knew what to expect. But when they told me I'd be reading the script next to a mountain waterfall, on horseback, strumming a harp, in a hailstorm, naked, ow, 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 ow. Well, that was wildly unexpected. Just like Wild Bean Cafe having a freshly ground signature espresso blend for everything from Americanos to flat whites in a fuel station. Wowzers. Wild Bean Cafe. Only at BP. Subject to availability at selected BP stores only.
This could be the best Christmas ever. Christmas Cash Call is here with a life-changing £100,000 to be won. Enter this week's draw before 5 p.m. Friday and you could get a call with £100,000. Christmas Cash Call. Text radio to 822 00 to enter now. Text costs £2.50 plus your standard network charge. 18 plus UK only global network competition. Full rules and free entry at christmascashcall.com.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
9 minutes before nine, coming to you, Gareth. You'll be the next caller. Let's go to social media, then texts as well. Sarah says, surely this labelling will follow these children all through their lives, and that would be appalling. Joe in Devon, my dyslexic daughter took her SATs and did very well in creative writing, but bombed the spelling. At secondary school, they put her in the bottom set, and even though it was obvious she was good at English, they refused to move her. Age 14, we moved house and county, and within a term, that school had moved her to the top set. She went on to take English A-level, is now at university studying to be an architect, but her life was damaged by that one test. Gareth in St Albans, what do you say to this subject? Gareth, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Yes, hello, thank you for having me. I'm calling up about my son, who's autistic with ADHD.
How old is he? Might I ask?
He's 12 at the moment. He did okay in middle school. Yeah. I wouldn't say that he excelled, but he wasn't getting into trouble. He wasn't being sent home. The school that he went to knew exactly how to handle him.
Mm.
He moved up to secondary, and everything changed. And in February, the special needs school that he was sent to expelled him for displaying the very behaviour that he was sent there for in the first place.
Sorry, he had been expelled. Was it a special school he'd gone to, did you say?
Yes, it was a special needs school that had expelled him for being special needs.
Well, they can't handle pupils then, can they? I mean, that's what they're put on earth to do, surely.
They failed at the sole purpose that they exist for.
Exactly.
So it was in February. He's been out of school ever since. The council don't seem to be particularly interested in finding him a new placement. He is currently tapped into a number of non-school activities that
What does that... Break that down for me a bit, Gareth. What's that mean?
One of them is a therapeutic farm that he... is about to start attending, which is, it's not a school, but there is an educational component to it.
Sorry, it is a real farm, is it, he's going
it's
to?
The whole point of it is that they can care for the animals and take up some sort of vocational type skills there, like woodworking and things like that. So it's not a school, but it's something.
Idea.
Yeah. He has something like what I would describe as a sort of mentorship session where he engages in computer gaming with a person who is there to listen, to sort of tap into his needs, which I think is quite a positive thing.
Can I ask you what I've asked a lot of mums and dads today? What are your ambitions for your son?
Just to be happy, really. It doesn't matter what he's doing in life, as long as it's fulfilling.
Will he be able to enter, quotes, the workplace, whatever that might mean?
I think he's going to struggle, but at the same time, I think he has also done more to provide himself with educational opportunities than the local council have. I've recently found out that he has been designing his own games on the Roblox platform. So he's getting...
On the what platform? Sorry, this is a world I don't know.
Roblox is a gaming platform where you can build your own online worlds, your own little mini games and things like that. So he's starting to tap into some of the sort of stuff that I do at work. I do a degree of programming. We have this little overlap there where I can help him with these things. And I'm seeing something that maybe if I can encourage it.
Yeah.
Could be a thing he could use later in life. So
what was
really
his behaviour that had him expelled, might I ask?
All very unacceptable stuff, and I certainly don't condone it. There was some violent outbursts there and verbal attacks at other pupils and teachers. It, basically not coping with the stress aspect of where he was at. I don't condone it at all. It wasn't acceptable, but it doesn't mean that he should be excluded. Their purpose was to teach him the skills to cope with these issues that he struggled with, not to exclude him entirely and say, you're on your own, mate.
He's got a very involved and engaged dad. Well done, Gareth. And that farm sounds really interesting. I hope it works out for that. How lovely if he suddenly warms to, I don't know, working with sheep or horses or something. He goes on to be a farrier or something. Fantastic. Gareth, thank you. John's in Brighton. John, your reaction to what we're hearing about these tests? They're too testing in some instances, we hear.
Yeah, quite close to me, because I am one of them people. But early 90s. And then, I don't know if it was SATs back then, but I got brought up in EBD schools.
EBD, sorry.
Emotional Behavioural Difficulties.
Oh, okay. Are they still around, or do we call them other things?
Right, they're probably not back like the late 80s or early 90s.
Right.
Probably not. But there are some people in schools today that don't get found out with these problems.
Right, I'm sure.
And they just get called ADHD. That's what they get called. It's hard to deal with, I think.
Did you sit any form of exams, John, at this EBD school?
I did. I did all right. I'm a lorry driver now.
Right.
So it's weird. And I just didn't go down the academic route. But there were some lads at our school, totally disruptive.
Yes.
100%. All they wanted to do was fix a lawnmower, fix an engine. But the school, I went to Worley Manor in Bath, and our headmaster was Les Alderman. He said, just find a key. So then kids wouldn't have to do academic stuff. He could tell that person wanted to fix an engine, do this, do that.
So how are we to identify? Because, let's be honest, children who can fix engines, they're going to want work, be in work for the rest of their lives, like plumbers and electricians. Not everybody wants to be an architect. So how are we going to work it out?
I think the schools are too big, mate, and the classes are too big now. I come from a generation of junior schools in the 80s where it was 30 kids. I don't know how many they have now. But are the teachers trained enough? And, again, I believe in autism because it took years to get my son into camp.
Okay. Years. I was going to ask if you had your... How old is your boy?
He's a 9-year-old twin. Okay. Yeah, and it took about six, seven.
And is,
from us inquiring...
Is your twin also autistic?
No, Paris is not. They're boy and girl.
Oh.
Paris isn't.
Interesting.
But that probably comes from me. Because I got hoiked out and put out of mainstream school into, they call it SEND now, it was an EBD school. Yes. We called it special school. And it was not because I couldn't do my work or nothing. It's just because I used to like winding people up. The teacher can deal with one bad student. She can't deal with one student making the whole class bad. Do you get that?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, I'd do my work and whatnot, and I got hoiked out. But the key was, I mean, I've lived my life quite okay. Les Alderman at Worley Manor, he said, some of you go to jail, some of you be all right, and some of you do really well.
Mm.
It's pretty much like the world. You go one or the other ways. But it's finding the key. Like my mate, who owns loads of garages now, just wanted to fix engines.
Yeah, and now, hopefully, he's making quite a deal of money fixing engines. John, thank you. Look after yourself. We're going a minute late to news because Chloe's in Edinburgh. If you can be brief, but I understand you are SEND, or you have some S-E-N-D.
Yes, I'll try to be quick, even though I'm not very good at that. I was only recently diagnosed with severe ADHD, the combined type, but my psychiatrist also wants me to be assessed for autism.
Mm.
But I think my main point is to, the main thing is that people shouldn't be saying, my kids can't do this, my kids can't do that. Because I feel like if my parents kept on telling me that, then I wouldn't have achieved 3 degrees, all top class grades, and the awards that I did, travelling internationally, owning my own business.
Oh, wow.
And only realising recently that I do have severe ADHD, which has pulled me back on some aspects of my academic and also my professional work. So I wouldn't necessarily tell people to not point out their flaws. But just to people, keep focused, stay in school, and yeah.
You were brilliant. You were brief, you were brilliant. Chloe, good luck. The music means we have to move on. And in a related story, we'll come to these comments from Deputy Leader of Reform UK, Richard Tice.
The sight of children in classes wearing ear defenders. I'm sorry. This is just insane. It's got to stop.
And Home Truths from a Home Secretary. He says she is regularly called the effing P word. Regrettably, I fear she is. Occasionally, but regularly. We had that debate in the first hour, to which we shall return. But the 9 o'clock news on LBC is next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock. The Home Secretary has insisted to LBC that her asylum reforms will be backed by Labour MPs despite growing unrest from backbenchers. The sweeping changes include fast-tracking deportations and limits on appeals. Some Labour MPs have condemned the plans as cruel and dystopian. But Shabana Mahmood says she's not prepared to let issues with the system continue to fuel division.
I have not thought for a minute about what any other political party is doing or what any other politician has to say about any of these matters. I'm the Home Secretary of this country. I can see a broken system. When people complain to me about the asylum system, they're not indulging in fake news. They haven't read some misinformation on social media. What they're complaining about is a very real thing. It is a broken system.
You can watch and read more of Shabana Mahmood's interview on lbc.co.uk. Sir Keir Starmer has insisted that he'll lead Labour into the next general election. The Prime Minister's warned against wasting time on leadership rows following speculation of a plot to replace him. A poll has suggested only a third of Labour voters want him to be the leader at the next election. But Government Minister Steve Reid's told Nick he understands unrest is there, but they're still fixing issues left by the Conservatives.
There's a cost of living crisis that, you know, we had 14 years where prices were going up faster than wages.
We did. How many more months are we going to hear from Labour? It's our inheritance.
Well, we are starting. So look at the NHS. We've got 5 million more appointments in the NHS. It's cutting waiting lists. Is it enough? Not yet. We need to keep going. But we are seeing the change now.
The UN Security Council has passed a draft resolution supporting Donald Trump's peace plan for Gaza. The proposal includes establishing a so-called Board of Peace as a transitional authority. But Hamas has rejected the resolution, saying it falls short of the demands and rights of Palestinian people. Developments near train stations in England will receive a default yes as the government looks to meet its promise of building 1.5 million new homes. The plans are due to be outlined by ministers today. Another proposal includes allowing ministers to intervene if local authorities intend to reject applications. And it's understood the government is drawing up proposals to stop people selling concert tickets above face value. Labour's manifesto included a promise that would lead to the end of touts making money out of the practice. Artists including Coldplay and Dua Lipa have recently campaigned for action on the issue. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was down 76 at 95.98. The pound buys $1.31 and €1.13. LBC weather, a cold but dry day for many, some outbreaks of rain in northwestern and southeastern areas with a high of 9 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Oh. So, off to my mum's first.
Yeah.
Then your nan's.
Yeah.
Then my cousin's.
Yes.
Then Uncle Paul's.
Yeah.
Then your second cousin twice removed from your dad's second marriage.
I mean, they did send us that card. Wait, who's my second cousin?
Škoda's got you covered this Christmas. With great offers and delivery before the big day on stock vehicles, you can do it all in a new Škoda. Find yours at škoda.co.uk. T's and C's apply. Ask your retailer for offers.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. 4 minutes after nine, Tuesday, November the 18th in this hour. Tough listening, part one. The politician who says that children wearing ear defenders in school is, his words, insane. And tough listening, part two. The leading politician who says she is regularly called the effing P-word. Both those stories in this hour.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
In a related story to the conversation we've just been having about Send Children, this show is put together with Gossamer Thread. We turn to comments from the deputy leader of Reform UK. The sight of children wearing ear defenders is, quotes, insane. He was speaking at a press conference in Westminster. He was warning of a crisis in SEND, Special Educational Needs System and Disabilities, but he pointed, I'll use that word again, to insane use of ear defenders.
The sight of children in classes wearing ear defenders. I'm sorry. This is just insane. It's got to stop. The teachers want it to stop. The heads want it to stop. It's not the right way forwards. And I just repeat the simple conclusion, the simple overall summary is that outcomes are getting worse.
Now, research from the County Councils Network and ISOS Partnership projects and a prediction that debts for SEND will reach £17.8 billion by 2029, nearly £1,000 per child in England. And Reform UK, which of course is looking to challenge any of the traditional ways of thought, is saying that savings need to be made. Now, just before I come into your calls, Hayley, you're going to be the first caller. Special needs children, particularly those with autism, SPD, which is sensory processing disorder, wear ear defenders to help manage overwhelming noise and sensory overload in loud or busy environments. They can be used for a variety of situations, such as during school transitions, public outings to places such as supermarkets or festivals, or at home during noisy activities. They provide a quiet and reassuring experience, helping children stay focused, reduce anxiety, and can prevent what are called meltdowns. That's the official definition. Hayley's in Antrim. Hayley, what do you want to say to this debate? Good morning.
You've just pretty much made my point.
Well, I didn't. We took medical guidance because it's important to say, do you have a child or did you wear them? What's the story with you, Hayley?
I have two children with autism. I would say high-functioning autism. Every child is different. If you meet one autistic child, you have just met one autistic child because the spectrum is so vast. What I will say is no child wears ear defenders as a fashion accessory. You know, you don't have these children going, oh, yes, I think I'll wear ear defenders today.
No.
It's more, it is very much for comfort. It's very much for reassurance. And the sensitivity to noise, my daughter would describe it as a hum. Even if the room is quiet, she can still hear like a constant hum. So that helps her concentrate. I think Mr. Tice is really showing his ignorance around the whole sand. Now, your system would be different to mine here in Northern Ireland. But really, he needs to look into it a bit more.
Can I ask a few questions? Let's not name her. But how old was your daughter? Well, you can name her, but I wouldn't dream of asking her name. Let's put it that way around. How old was your daughter when you realised that she might need the use of ear defenders?
Well, I didn't. This is the thing. I, even as a staff nurse, having worked with children, I didn't recognise my daughter because I just thought, that's her, you know.
That's just the way she is, you mean?
Yeah. Her name's Lexi, by the way. She's not my name.
All right. How old is Lexi?
Lexi is now 16.
Right.
What she uses is earplugs in school.
Right.
And she was diagnosed when she was 10, and it was her teacher that actually said to me, she's very black and white in her outlook, and she can be very unwilling and unbending, but she's perfectionist.
I go back to my school days, which are a long, long time ago, but a lot of how you learn is obviously listening to your teacher or teachers. How does your daughter gain knowledge?
She gains knowledge the same way everybody else does.
Well, she can't listen to the teacher, can she?
Yeah, she can. It reduces the noise and the surrounding noise. For children, I don't think they're wearing ear defenders all the time.
No.
They can listen and but when it's quiet times and moving between classrooms is very, very overwhelming. Noise, it's just so overwhelming.
Does she ever have to wear them at home?
No, we have a quiet house.
Yeah, you have a quiet house, okay. But I don't know if she was to accompany you to the shops or go to the supermarket or get on a train or go to an airport, would she require to wear them then?
Yes, and she would, you can't see them because they're earplugs, but she would remove herself from a situation she finds too noisy or too overwhelming.
And has she explained to you, does she say, Mum, I get nervous or I feel I'm going to, I don't know, be ill or something? Has she described what the sensation she's going through?
Yeah, she can feel it. She says she can literally feel it through her body. Mm. It's just, she has anxiety. She fights it and she goes to school and she's an excellent student. But for her to be there, it's difficult. Now, she is one of the lucky ones. I think without these kind of things, if ear defenders work for a child and they're able to stay in a classroom, that's brilliant. If a child with autism becomes so overwhelmed, it's fight or flight. They will go into meltdown. And it's really about the comfort of the child.
Have you witnessed that with Lexi?
Oh, yes. Yes, I have.
Poor kid.
Yeah, Lexi's go-to is she'll go to the school toilets and she'll phone me.
Okay.
And she will cry and try and explain, but it takes her a while to come down.
Yeah,
with any autistic child, it takes them a while to regulate their emotions.
So, the young woman will be able to work?
Yes, she will.
Does she have any ambitions what she wants to do?
She wants to be a speech and language therapist and work with children who have autism.
And her group of friends, they're totally accepting that sometimes she, you know, just has to go to a quiet place.
Absolutely. And she's very honest and open about her autism. Because she's very honest and open with everything, she doesn't really have that social filter.
If Mr. Tice was sitting in the studio now, what would you say to him?
Do your research. Don't just rely on speaking to teachers. Speak to children. Speak to the children that this is going to affect. They're the ones you need to keep in school.
Hayley, best wishes to your daughter. Thank you. And thanks for all the details you gave us. Jeff's in Stoke-on-Trent. You have a child who uses ear defenders?
For a little bit, and when he was about four, loud noises used to set him off.
And when the you other say set him off, what would happen with the young chap? What would he do?
Well, to me, he'd display actions saying that his ears were hurting through loud noises, so the other half would put ear defenders on. But obviously, I'm of a similar opinion to Richard Tice. So I'd take them off. So I'd let him have the meltdown because I just saw it as a reaction of a 4-year-old with sensitive hearing.
Sure.
But now he's 6 and goes to fireworks displays with no ear defenders and he's fine.
Oh.
But he's got high functioning autism. But it's the other half would let that define him rather than see the reaction as a reaction of a five year old, if you know what I mean.
What level of conflict does this cause with his mother?
Initially, quite a bit.
Right.
quite a bit, because she had just reached for the ear defenders and stick them on. And
did you live with the boy's mother?
What you doing? Yeah. So a prime example, land up now, we're in some public toilets using the hand dryers.
Oh, yeah.
And he was going, having a meltdown. So we come out, the other half, headphones on, and I just snatched them off straight away. Just let him have the meltdown, let him deal with it, you know.
Why is it important, do you think, that he had, to use your expression, that he has the meltdown?
So he learns a coping mechanism, he learns how to deal with it.
And is he getting better with it, would you say?
Yeah, we don't use ear defenders anymore.
Oh, we don't use them at all now?
No.
Okay.
It's taken a couple of years, but we've got there.
Is Richard Tice right or wrong with what he's saying?
I think it's because ear defenders are so readily available and they seem to be an easy solution at the time.
Mm.
So we let those reactions define the kid.
Good luck to him. Jeff, thanks for all your input. Best wishes to you, your family, your partner, everyone else. Emma's in Southampton. What would you say to Richard Tice? Is he right or is he wrong? Good morning.
Completely wrong. Good morning. I get really cross about this because I've got 3 children, all with different special needs. Both my girls are on the spectrum,
mm-hmm.
and they are so vastly different. The eldest one's 19 and she's worn into ear defenders since she was young.
Yeah.
But she wasn't diagnosed until she was 15, whereas her little sister, there's a 9-year age gap, was diagnosed at 6. And she's at college now. She wears headphones that cancel out a lot of noise.
Yeah.
And it's fine. It's fine for people that live in the neurotypical world where, you know, the world is set up for people that don't have these kind of disabilities.
Right.
And it's all right to say, oh, well, we're forced them to not wear ear defenders and get them to get used to it. What I would suggest is I'm also an autism ambassador to the National Autistic Society. Do a course. They have an amazing resources. I've done the course and they showed a video of what it's like for people who have autism to go into environments where it's loud and noisy and you suddenly then realise how awful it must be for them. So my youngest one, she wear her ear defenders in school hall. She doesn't wear them all the time, only when it's really loud and noisy. She doesn't like it. She hand dryers. She hates them because they're so loud. if we don't have her ear defenders, I have to put my hands over her ears so she can use them, because it's too loud. Not every, you know, every human being is different.
Of course.
You know, so why not allow them to use these devices appropriately?
You don't think it in any way restricts her ability to absorb information in a lesson?
God, no. My daughter's... No, because for her, she can't concentrate because of the noise in the classroom. When you were talking to one of your other callers, asking her how her daughter verbalised how she felt, my eldest didn't know how to verbalise her feelings, because that is one of the problems they have.
Right.
They don't understand their feelings. And because it's a spectrum, every single sensory thing that we have in our bodies, even some children don't understand when they're hot and cold.
I have to leave it there, Emma. Best wishes to you three. Thank you for your input on that. We will stay with this and also come back to the story with which we started the show. Home truths from a Home Secretary in the language she says she regularly has to endure. We're at 9:17. LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
The Home Secretary has told LBC that she's determined to steer her asylum overhaul through Parliament despite growing resistance. Sir Keir Starmer says he'll lead Labour into the next general election despite speculation over a coup to replace him. And developments near train stations in England will receive a default yes as the government looks to meet its promise of building 1.5 million homes. LBC weather, a frosty but dry morning for many. Outbreaks of rain in the northwest, a high of 9 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. There are queues on the M25 anti-clockwise. The Exeter Slip Road at Junction 29 for Romford is partly blocked because a lorry has broken down. It's slow on the M25 clockwise from Junction 8 for Reigate, round to Junction 10 for the A3 after a lorry had a tyre changed earlier. There are queues on the A20 Sidcup Bypass going into town. It's partly blocked before Crittle's Corner because of an accident. On the tube, there are severe delays on the central line between West Ruislip and Northolt. On the trains, Avanti West Coast and London North Western have delays of up to half an hour and some cancellations between Euston and Milton Keynes Central. That's because of some problems with the overhead lines. And on London Overground, there's no Lioness line between Watford Junction and Harrow and Wealdstone, and severe delays between Harrow and Wealdstone and Euston.
LBC.
Stand Up to Cancer is back. Join us on December 12th for an unmissable evening of entertainment, stories and science. And this year, we have one simple rule. Had a giggle? Give a little. Let's give it a try. What do you do if you see a spaceman? Parking it, man. If that raised a smile, make it matter. Donate now at standuptocancer.org.uk and help fund research that can save lives.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. This is LBC.
Welcome on board this LNER service from London King's Cross to Edinburgh. My name's Paul, your train manager today, and hang on, is that a Scrabble tournament in coach here? Yes. G with an X is a word. Right, we're cruising at 125 miles per hour. Same speed this lad next to me is typing. Someone's on a roll. The cafe bar's in coach G if you fancy a brew. Or if you're mid-box-set binge, just order through the QR code at your seat. We'll deliver it. So sit back and enjoy your journey. With LNER, it's freedom all the way.
How's the business going?
We're busier than ever, but struggling to get the staff we need.
Oh, recruiting can be such a distraction. We gave Job Centre Plus a try, and they've really helped us out.
Really?
Yeah, it was dead easy. We got our own employer advisor, Julie, who helped advertise our jobs, shortlisted candidates for us, and let us interview at the Job Centre. We've hired some great people, and Job Centre Plus really took the hassle out of it, and there was no fee.
Brilliant. That's straight on my to-do list.
Find out more at business.gov.uk/recruit. Eligibility criteria apply.
Waitrose presents...
I really fancy a mince pie.
One man's selfless journey from sofa to kitchen.
I'm getting up.
For a number one golden mince pie with juicy golden raisins, cherries and apricots and zesty limoncello.
With some cream.
For a number one golden mince pie with juicy golden raisins, cherries and apricots, zesty limoncello and a dollop of fresh cream.
Limoncello.
Waitrose, the home of food lovers. Selected stores subject to availability.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Match your calls in just a moment. Gemma, you'll be the next caller. Andrew says, my son used to freak out with hand dryers when he was 4 or 5. I just told him to stop being silly. It's a hairdryer. Within a couple of months, he was fine with them, and he's been fine ever since, says Andrew in Woking. Same subject. Do remember to give me your names. You're not all doing that, so I can't read that one. It's quite... Yoshi, you have. I'm so sorry, right at the end. Just check that I can read that. Yes, Suzanne says, our daughter wears ear protection on occasions. It's improved as she's got older, and she tends to use her AirPods or earplugs when she needs to. She has a condition called misophonia, which we had diagnosed through an audiologist. We were concerned she may also have a spectrum disorder, but she doesn't. And this is mainly an anxiety-related problem. I'm convinced the lockdown contributed to this, as she found returning to school very difficult, but school was very helpful. All right, do keep them coming, as I always say. Gemma's in Birmingham. Gemma. Ah.
Hi.
Hello, you're a teacher, is that right?
I am, yes.
How's that working out?
Yeah, it's going really well, actually. I absolutely adore my job.
What subject do you teach?
So I'm teacher in charge of English and literacy, but I've also been a careers lead and taught kind of wider curriculum, such as animal care as well.
I sense you're a secondary school teacher.
Yeah, so I work in an alternative provision secondary.
Alternative provision, what does that mean?
So an alternative provision are schools, they're normally quite small schools, that cater for children that potentially haven't been able to get along in a mainstream school. That might have been things like, due to things like special educational needs, behavioural issues, or just can't cope with the mainstream environment.
How busy are you?
Very busy. I had to tell you, one of the lovely ladies on your line, that I couldn't talk when she was ready because I had students with me, so apologies about that.
No, not at all. She'll understand, don't worry, I get it. Are more and more children being diagnosed with this?
You know what, I don't know the statistics. However, I do know that when Richard Ty says it, there's an overdiagnosis. I've got to disagree, I really have. So for me, I've got dyslexia, I'm autistic, I'm dyspraxic, and I'm waiting for an ADHD appointment next week.
Right.
For me, I wasn't diagnosed with my autism until I was 15, and it had a profound effect on how I accessed education as a child.
In what way?
I didn't access education. I was a non-attender. I had an attendance of 6% in my first year of secondary school.
Good
because
Lord.
I couldn't access. I then had to go to a specialist provision, and it ended up with me being in hospital for 11 months of my year 11 because I couldn't cope. I had a complete breakdown because my needs were not being met. I struggled with my reading and writing because I wasn't diagnosed with dyslexia until I was 14. Mm. Again, that put me significantly behind my peers and meant I didn't sit my GCSEs at 16 with everybody else. And I wasn't actually diagnosed with dyspraxia until I was 27, which led to loads of injuries and stuff because I wasn't being able to manage my spatial awareness. So to me, I'm all for, if kids are showing signs of additional needs, we should be aiming to support them. In terms of Richard Tice calling ear defenders, I think, did he use the word insane?
He did, yes, insane.
Yeah, so I use ear defenders in school myself. I actually use the sit-on ones that he's probably referring to outside of school, but I regularly use the in-ear ones at school to help me with my sensory issues in the classroom.
What would be taking place that would make you apply those? Do we call them ear plugs? Is that what you said?
Yeah, they're ear defenders, but they sit inside the ear.
Sure.
So
what would it need for you to wear those?
Pretty much anything. I wear them pretty much all the time. So bear in mind, technology has come a long way. I can set them to only tune out a certain amount of noise. I can still hear my students. I can still cater to their needs. Most of the time, they don't even know I'm wearing them, but it gives me the ability to be in school. And when we think about, it's all over the news. I was listening to you just, I think it was last week or the week before, about youth unemployment.
Mm.
Now, if I didn't have the things in place, like my ear defenders, like my weighted blanket, like the ability to move around consistently, fidget toys, rest breaks, etc., I wouldn't be in employment, and instead, I would probably be on unemployment benefit. However, because my employer's made those changes,
yeah,
I can be a contributing member of society. So why can't we do the same for children?
What's a weighted blanket, if I heard you correctly?
Yeah, so a weighted blanket is used often for people with sensory issues. It's as it says on the tin, it's a blanket that has weight to it. So it's a high pressure sensory input to help regulate emotion for people, particularly with autism, that can't necessarily regulate themselves in a high sensory environment.
How aware is our education system of, when you were a child, children such as you?
I mean, they weren't. I remember I've had to have counselling because I used to get locked in my head teacher's office all day and just left there because
really?
I was a naughty child. Yeah. And I'm not that old. I'm 31. This was happening less than 20 years ago. So for me, my parents actually bought a house when I was 16 that had an annex because my parents were told by the school system that I'd never live independently and I'd never have a job because of my needs. I now have my mortgage, I've got two beautiful stepchildren, I've got a foster child, and I work in a school full time. So I don't think schools were aware of that. And if we can be aware of that, that's so important. I think schools have come a long way, but comments like Richard Tice is saying that we're insane for using and supporting the use of ear defenders, it's not helpful. And it's contradictory because he then later says that that teachers know best. Well, let us know best. Let those children have what they need to access education.
I must leave it there, Gemma. Good luck with all the teaching you do, and thank you for sharing so much detail about your personal condition. Gemma, thank you. William's in Blackpool. William, what do you want to say about these comments from the politician, Mr. Tice?
Hi, Nick. Good to speak to you again.
Good to have you on.
I'm a Reform Party member and also a parent of two children on the spectrum, the autistic spectrum. I found his remarks quite disparaging, really, considering that my children have come on phenomenally with the use of them within classes and busy spaces. Without them, both were suffering within mainstream schools because we kept them within the mainstream to try and develop social skills, which I think is very important. Your previous caller was such an inspiration to hear as well, mm-hmm. because so many of her issues are so many of the issues that I as a parent see within my own children. Mm-hmm. The thing about his remarks is it just seems so short-sighted from a politician who I'm not sure if he's had any exposure to family on any spectrum, but it's quite difficult. And really, it was it's not good to hear, really. But I do feel that as a Reform member, that my feedback will be listened to, which is quite good. And I hope it does find its way back to Richard, because really, ear defenders are a massive plus and a massive bonus. They're not overused at all.
What about the amount of money that's being spent, William? How concerned are you about that and its extraordinary increase that Mr. Tice referenced?
I think it's a massive increase, and whilst I feel we are progressive as a party, you know, as Reform has shown itself to be, this is a step back, and really, really, investment in our children, who have so many great talents that might be hiding behind social awkwardness and social disparaging disparity, is so important. We're investing in the future, and one of those investments are our children. Both of my children are far more intelligent than I am. I mean, they speak to me about things like coding and things like that today, and I had not a clue what they're talking about. And I'm only 38. Only 38. But I find it, I find that one policy that should be picked up on is why are so many more children being diagnosed these days with spectrum disorders?
Lastly, why do you think, are we just getting better at diagnosing it? What do you think is behind this?
I think there's more of an awareness of it now. So when I was young, like your previous caller, unless someone was, what you class as potentially ASD level 2, which is non-verbal, and forgive my ignorance if it's developed since then, I think that people were just put into brackets and not completely understood.
William, thank you for that. All your input. We may stay with this subject, but coming up after the news, we'll go back to the story with which we started the show, the Home Truths from the Home Secretary and the language she has to endure. You've already heard it, of course, covered here on LBC, an effing P-word regularly. 9:30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara, here on LBC News. Dominic Ellis.
The Home Secretary has told LBC she's not prepared to let issues with the UK's asylum system continue to fuel division. Siobhan Mahmood's also said that she's confident she won't have to U-turn on the changes as backbench rebellion continues to grow. Sir Keir Starmer insists he'll lead Labour into the next general election. The Prime Minister says he's utterly focused on tackling the cost of living and warned against wasting time on leadership rows. And development near train stations in England will receive a default yes as the government looks to meet its promise of building 1.5 million new homes. Another proposal includes allowing ministers to intervene if local authorities intend to reject applications. LBC weather, a cold but dry morning. Some outbreaks of rain in the northwest, a high of 9 degrees.
This is LBC.
A Southern train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to skip traffic and glide to wherever you need to be. With headspace to focus on more important matters. Like if that cloud is a starfish or sunflower. Fast journeys without the rush with great deals at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
the £5 meal deal from McDonald's. Get a cheeseburger or mayo chicken, medium fries, four McNuggets and a medium soft drink for guess what? That's right, £5. It's not called the £5 meal deal for nothing. From 11am, not available on delivery. Carbonated soft drink upgrade fees apply. Participating restaurants, subject to availability.
Do you ever feel like getting back under your duvet in the middle of the day? Ferroglobin is a great tasting liquid formula with iron, which contributes to the reduction of tiredness and fatigue and normal formation of haemoglobin. Ferroglobin from Vitabiotics at Boots, pharmacies and Vitabiotics.com.
For the nappies, peekaboos and tea parties. Mess, tantrums and sleepless nights. All those yo-yos, action figures and shinies. Lifts to mates, lifts to parties, lifts everywhere. For each and every one of those teenage years. Let's be honest. You probably owe your parents one. So tell them about pension credit. It could boost their pension income by an average of over £4,000 a year. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
All right, important conversation we're having, and we will return to that. But if you go by the front page of the newspapers, they are all reflecting, in that modern word, reflecting what we heard in the House of Commons yesterday from the Home Secretary Shabana Mahmood. To quote one newspaper, the Daily Telegraph, Mahmood turns air blue in blast at Liberals. That's because the question he received was from Lib Dem MP Max Wilkinson. And this is what happened next.
Britain has a long and proud history of responding with compassion to people fleeing unimaginable horrors. That should continue in a way that is fair and sustainable. So we welcome some of what the Home Secretary have said on that score. But what is not helpful is the Home Secretary claiming that the country is being torn apart by immigration. Acknowledging the challenges facing our nation is one thing, but stoking division by using immoderate language is quite another.
Thank you, Madam Deputy Speaker. I have to say to the Honourable Gentleman, I wish I had the privilege of walking around this country and not seeing the division that the issue of migration and asylum system is creating across this country. Unlike him, unfortunately, I am the one that is regularly called a and told to go back home. It is I who knows through my personal experience and that of my constituents just how divisive the issue of asylum has become in our country.
It is extraordinary, all the chuntering, and then she says, she drops the F-bomb and utter silence. No one quite... Imagine being the editor who's putting that out live. That's a bit embarrassing, isn't it? I apologise for the Home Secretary's language. Anyway, later, speaking with LBC's political editor, Natasha Clark, last night, after that mammoth Commons appearance, Home Secretary explained why she chose to use that language.
It's horrible to be subject to racism. It's not new. There's a bit more of it around these days than there used to be, unfortunately. But what I'm reflecting is not just my personal experience, it's that of my family and many of my constituents.
Do you think it's getting worse?
I can only tell you what my own constituents tell me. I mean, as a constituency MP, I regularly hear from people in my own patch how worried they are about their safety and security in their own country and how they can see this issue of asylum and migration more broadly causing division in our communities.
That was last night. In the first hour of the show, I spoke with one of her senior colleagues, Secretary of State for Housing Communities, stressing that word, and local government, Steve Reid. I asked him, what's he going to do to prevent such divisions within our communities?
Well, I mean, the kind of abuse, personal abuse that Shabana has been subject to is wholly unacceptable.
I agree, and you are community secretary, so what are you going to do about it?
Well, I mean, she's in charge of the policing and there's hate crime laws as well. But as community secretary, I work very closely with Shabana to look at what is fueling community divisions in our communities. And I'm afraid right now we know from knocking on doors, speaking to members of the public, there are high levels of concern about the levels of illegal migration and asylum hotels. So what Shabana was talking about yesterday is how do we start to tackle that problem? We were all elected as Labour MPs on a manifesto commitment to secure our borders, but we're going to do it in a way that is fair.
And then, of course, I came to you, because I'm older than Shabana Mahmood, and I apologise for the word I'm going to use, but I was at school before, probably before she was even born, but I was at school before, and I was regularly called an eye-tie, right? Well, not very often, because of my last name. I apologise if anyone, but there's no other way of telling that story, so if you're offended, but it happened to me a lot, right? But then I must admit, as we got older, as society matured, it's very, very, very... I can't remember the last time, apart from emails. I get it on emails all the time, but that's fine. So no normal people, apart from who sign emails, you know, like the Green Monkey or something, no normal people do it. So what is the reality out there? Are we actually going back to the days of, I don't know, the 60s and the 70s, using words like P-word and, of course, the N-word as well for people who aren't white? You need to tell me, because obviously I don't know. So I asked you in the first hour, and here's a little of what you told me, starting with a call, and I'm glad we're playing a bit of this, because a lot of you said how much you warmed to him. Dilip, calling from Leicester.
I'm Indian, came to England in 71 from Uganda with a British passport. Got quite a big social media page. I often get it. I've actually turned off messages sent by people I don't know off, because I used to get regular abuse on there. My daughter works in criminal defence law, and she gets it very regularly, even to people that she goes out to defend or represent and everything. She gets it very, very regularly.
Paul is in Marazion.
She might have gone over the top, but I think she was only saying what she probably experienced. I'm not sure it's that common anymore.
Tony's in Kilmarnock.
My son, who is now 11, was playing with an Asian child, and the parents came from Saudi Arabia. They are British citizens. My son is British. My son was born in Glasgow. They were playing. Then the kid says, "Where were you born?" And my son said, "I was born here." And the Asian child said, "No, you can't be. I myself as a black person, you know, I've seen this. This has been, you know, going on for years and years."
So what is the reality for you? Mo in Stevenage. Hello, Mo. What are you going to tell me?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. So I just wanted to share my personal experience as well as my children's.
Please.
So I came to this country at the age of 15, 16. I'm close to my 40 now.
Yes.
And I have paid my way. I've got 3 degrees. I work in the front line. I bought a property, moved out of London, lived in London since I moved over.
I just want to ask you one question, and you don't have to answer, but sort of for my listeners, they're all wondering where you came from, and there's absolutely no need to tell me, but I do want to ask.
From Nigeria.
From Nigeria, okay.
Nice and direct about that.
Yeah.
And I've lived here ever since. I have 2 children. I've had my children here. They are British. I've naturalised as well. I'm British now. But I think things are becoming so toxic. My children I've experienced discrimination. My children have experienced the same. The names that my children are being called. And I'm talking about something that's happening now.
How old are your children?
Becoming so toxic. My 10 and 7.
Oh, gosh.
They've been called different names. I have told your producers what they have been called. And every day, we need to do the pep talk before school.
Every day, I need to do that
because they don't want to go into school. But it's not just that. It's what are the schools doing about it? It's what are the schools doing with parents? Because I don't think that children are born with, you know, thoughts like
that.
They must learn it from somewhere.
They learn it from home, but I would imagine.
It almost seems as though no matter what we do, and I'm telling you, I see myself as British, my children are British, but no matter what we do, we're still not good enough. No matter what we do, we're still not seen as the same, regardless of, you know, what you call yourself, how you see yourself, what contributions you make. I work in the front line. I work with unaccompanied asylum-seeking children. I work in safeguarding. So I meet a lot of families. I still continue to contribute to this country. But oftentimes I'm reminded of who I am, where I've come from. My children have a Nigerian last name, and they're told every time, oh, that's a bit unusual. That's a bit different. Yes, it is different, but that's my name. I go into meetings, and they ask me, is that a short form to your name? No, there isn't.
Right.
My name is my name.
Right, right. Is it getting progressively worse? I appreciate your children are only 7 and 10, so they're quite early in their educational career. And what do you think is fueling this toxicity?
I think there's a narrative in the media of there are illegal migrants, but there are also legal migrants who contribute to this country, who do what they're supposed to do, just as any other citizens. But I think the narrative in the media is most are illegal migrants, and we don't hear about the legal that make positive contributions. So that's overshadowing those people who are making positive contribution.
Let's talk a little bit, if we may, about the makeup of your children's classrooms. I don't know Stevenage well, but I do know Stevenage. I've been there. Surely, I'd be surprised. Are they the only non-white children in each of their respective classes?
So just to let you know, we say Stevenage because I know that if people are listening, they will know who I am. So that's not where I live. That's where we start from.
Ah, right. I'm but so sorry. Okay.
That's okay. My children are one... there's three other children who are black in my children's school, in the whole school.
Oh, my God.
So I get that. Right. I get that. It's a very small school, a one-form entry, but they've come from a three-form entry in their previous school in the same area, and they're still experiencing the same thing. I continue to ask myself, every time they ask me, can we just move this house back to London? No, we're not, because we bought a place. This is how horrible it's got. I'm a school governor. Because I want to make a difference.
Yeah.
Because I need other people to see that we can do something about it, that we can work together about it. But even there, I don't think I'm making much of an impact. Because as soon as you speak, it's like, oh, you do have a voice. And I have to train my children. I have to continue to build their self-esteem and confidence.
What?
Why should they be treated differently?
You say that a lot of this comes because of the issues with illegal immigration. What's your view of those migrants who cross the channel in the dinghies?
I do think it needs to be stopped 100%. To ask me what it is we need to do to stop it, I don't know. I do think, because not only are they doing that, they're putting people's lives at risk. When people do come over, I've met, like I said to you, I've met unaccompanied asylum-seeking children, and sometimes you think they're scripts. Oh, I was told I should get this, I should get that, and you're like, no, it doesn't work like that. So I get that. I know that people are doing it illegally. I don't know what the answer is to that, but I think we also need to focus on the positives. We need to focus on the people who are coming here, doing what they can to contribute to our society.
I totally agree. Best wishes to your children. You shouldn't have to give them a daily pep talk to counter the racism that's exhibited towards them. 10 and 7. They've got their whole school careers effectively ahead of them. Mo, thank you. Please, it's community moving on. It's to get other folk involved. Off to Raj in Bedford. Raj, your take on what you heard from the Home Secretary?
To be completely honest with you, I'm going to have to totally agree with her. I mean, I'm a British agent, born and bred here, paid all my taxes here, run a company, run three companies actually, employ people as well. So in my view, I mean, I've seen there is obviously a high degree of racism in this country at the moment, and it seems to be fueled online. And my take is we need to do something about online. I mean, for the first time in about 40 years, I'm 50 odd, I was called the P word online. Obviously, it was on Facebook. Right. I reported it. Nothing was done about it. Yeah. I heard nothing back about it, apart from, you know, we're going to kick this person off this this comments or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I think that needs to change. I think what needs to change is we don't, you know, the police haven't got the time to go around arresting people or you know, and they shouldn't be really doing, you know, in my opinion, they shouldn't be going around just arresting people. I think they should be fining people. I think we need to have a court that when people use racist language, whether it's online or in normal sort of, you know, sort of to be recorded by phone or anything like that, they need to be fined. They need to be fined £1,000 initially and then up to £10,000 and then possibly a prison sentence after that.
Raj, do you agree with what Mo was just saying, that it is getting worse? It does seem to be getting increasingly more toxic.
Yes, it is. And I think the online presence is making it worse, because you find it like people are normalizing language and racist language, and that needs to change. That culture needs to change. They need to be fined. Like I said, our prisons are full.
Yes.
We can't put people in prison. We can't have the police resources, but we can have a dedicated team to identify these people who make racist comments, misogynist comments, or whatever they are, and find them.
Raj, thank you. We'll return to this subject. We might also return to the conversation we had regarding children wearing ear defenders, which one senior politician in school is, quotes, insane. More on that as well. 9:45 LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
Home Secretary Shabana Mahmood's told LBC that she's confident she won't have to U-turn on her asylum reforms despite growing unrest within Labour. Housing developments within a 15-minute walk of a train station in England are going to receive a default yes under new planning rules. And it's understood the government is drawing up plans to stop people selling concert tickets above face value. LBC weather, a cold but dry day for many, outbreaks of rain in the northwest, a high of 9 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. On the M25 clockwise, there's a lane blocked at Cobham Services because a vehicle has broken down, so there are queues from Junction 9 for Leatherhead. There are also queues on the A20 Sidcup bypass going into town after an accident earlier before Crittle's Corner. It's slow in Stockwell on the A3 Clapham Road going into town. There's a lane closed at Stockwell Station for some emergency repairs. On the Tube, there are severe delays on the central line between West Ruislip and Northolt after a train broke down earlier. On the trains, Avanti West Coast and London North West then have delays of up to half an hour and cancellations between Euston and Milton Keynes Central. That's after there were some problems with the overhead lines earlier. And on London Overground, there are severe delays on the entire Lioness line. That's after there were problems with the signals earlier.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
It's a very important question. Will Siobhan Mahmood's immigration policies make the widespread racism we're witnessing worse, or as she claims, better?
James O'Brien at 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or our new LBC app.
Hey Sainsbury's, off to my neighbour's Christmas do later. Got any gift ideas?
How about our Taste the Difference chocolate chip shortbread tin? Deliciously Moorish all-butter biscuits in a bougie box. Or give them a treat for the eyes and the taste buds with our indulgent Taste the Difference cherry and amaretto panettone. What do you think?
I think I'd rather keep them for myself.
Looking for a tasty festive gift? Ask Sainsbury's. Sainsbury's, good food for all of us.
Subject to availability, available in selected supermarkets and online.
Call Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060 973, LBC.
A Thameslink train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to recharge yourself and your phone. To stretch out, sit back, and when you hear all change, please, you'll know you already have. Go with your flow with great deals at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
How's the business going?
We're busier than ever, but struggling to get the staff we need.
Oh, recruiting can be such a distraction. We gave Job Centre Plus a try, and they've really helped us out.
Really?
Yeah, it was dead easy. We got our own employer advisor, Julie, who helped advertise our jobs, shortlisted candidates for us, and let us interview at the Job Centre. We've hired some great people, and Job Centre Plus really took the hassle out of it, and there was no fee.
Brilliant. That's straight on my to-do list.
Find out more at business.gov.uk/recruit. Eligibility criteria apply.
Join Andre Rieu at OVO Arena, Wembley, London on 18th of September. Book now at andrerieu.com.
Do you ever feel like getting back under your duvet in the middle of the day? Ferroglobin is a great tasting liquid formula with iron, which contributes to the reduction of tiredness and fatigue and normal formation of haemoglobin. Ferroglobin from Vitabiotics at Boots, pharmacies and Vitabiotics.com.
Calling all black cab drivers. Let's talk about those quieter times when your meter's sitting idle and those journeys when you're coming back empty. Why not consider Uber? They can give your meter a boost just when you need it. Join close to 1,000 black cab drivers already on Uber and gain access to millions of passengers at the touch of a button. Black cabs on Uber are priced by your meter, and the service fee will be no more than 5% until the end of 2025. Turn downtime into prime time. Go to uber.com/blackcabs to start earning today. Terms and conditions apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
This vile language that Siobhan Mahmood, a home truce from the Home Secretary, but how regular is it? Chanda in Camden. What would you say to the Home Secretary about that, Chanda? Good morning.
Well, it is maybe not appropriate language for the where she was, but the reality is she's talking with passion and she's talking with lived first-hand experience. And if you are, I'm the daughter of immigrants. My parents came here in the 60s. I'm of Indian origin. I was born here. My husband is British Jamaican. Mm-hmm. And when our son was born, I realised I was going to have a very different kind of conversation. And being married to a black man, I see more firsthand what he experiences than I do as an Indian. But the reality is,
what do you see? And obviously, I'd ask you not to use any inappropriate language. No. What is it that you see?
I see that things are going backwards and things have got worse. And in the 70s, my parents lost everything because of racism. People boycotted the supermarket they owned. They went to, you know, to the 7 miles. We were in Farnborough, Hampshire. We were the only brown kids in a school. We had eggs thrown at us. We had names called at us. We had to, my parents lost everything. We had to leave and come back to London. London is much more tolerant. It is the most amazing city in the world. It is the only place where you can see a Nigerian and a German and a couple, a Chinese and an English, an Indian and a Jamaican.
It's not the only, with respect, you go to a city like New York or Los Angeles, you'll see.
It's not as liberal as London. It is not as accepted as London. London is amazing for this.
Okay, well, I can't talk about acceptance, but I can certainly talk about seeing, because you will see them, I think, is fair
yeah,
to say.
Yeah, you see them, but it's much more prevalent here, and it's much more accepted, much more tolerated. So London's brilliant. You know, we are the only country that outside of India has had a brown prime minister, whether you liked him or not. It's regardless an amazing thing. But the point is that things are going backwards with the recent EM marches and the...
Why are they going backwards?
There's a lot of hate.
Why are they going backwards?
Because it is... in my opinion, the reality is that since things like Brexit, it has reared its ugly face. You look at what Nigel Farage was campaigning about, and, you know, all this, you know, the immigration conversations, they are so loaded. And actually, that the tolerance, and when there's an economic downturn, when things are tough for people, they look to blame. But, Nick, the other thing that we have to call out and recognise is that with every community, there is racism. As an Indian, I can say that Indian people are racist, you know, and there is racism amongst everyone, but it is about ignorance and tolerance. And when people see other communities doing better or improving and, you know, prospering, they don't like it. There's jealousy. And it's so heavily fueled politically, economically, socially. So we have to address all of those things. And when you think of a child, they are not born with these kind of knowledge, and this kind of, you know, so it is their environment and society that...
Now, the reason we're having this conversation is that the Home Secretary was challenged by a Liberal Democrat MP about these reforms that she wants to put in place as regards people coming to this country via boats, boat crossings. What's your view of those asylum seekers?
If people need help, we have to help. We have to help. Of course, illegal immigration needs to be addressed. And
what
it
do you
is
mean
worrying.
By addressed? Does it need to be stopped?
Illegal immigration needs to be stopped. Yes, right. They have to put measures into place. It has to be tackled, but in a measured and considered way.
Are these measured and considered methods that she's talking about? Would you say or not?
I don't have enough of the detail. I only know the headlines, so I cannot comment. But I am sure that they are thought through and they are considered. I think that the Labour government isn't being given enough of a chance to implement everything that they've had to tackle. They have inherited a nightmare. And I always liken it to, you know, turning around the ship that was stuck in the Suez Canal. Couldn't happen overnight. Right. You know, you have to give people time, but the tolerance messaging and the acceptance and the, you know, love thy neighbour, all of these things, the core values, British values.
Let me ask you now, do you think if you were a young woman, or indeed if you were a girl at school in Farnborough now, you'd still experience that, or have we at least moved, hopefully we've moved on?
No, we have, the dial has shifted a lot, right. And I'm Asian, so the Asian community has done exceptionally well here. And so I think that, but I think when I was living in Manchester 10, 15 years ago, someone said to me, go back to where you came from. And I said, do you mean from London? You know, but it was a man in a car park with his children swearing at me and telling me to go back to where I came from. And I was shaken and I was shocked and I thought, gosh, it took me back to the 1970s. I was a kid, but real, real baby. I don't remember so much, but I know what my parents faced because we've spoken about it.
We have. And I have to move on. Best wishes to your parents and indeed your whole family. Chanda, thank you for your personal story. Sian in Chelmsford. Sian, your input on this. Morning.
Good morning. I've not actually called in before, so hello.
How lovely to have you on. Thank you, Sian. What's made you reach for the telephone?
Well, it was just about the sort of obviously issues with racism. Like, I'd sort of, as a white woman, I don't see it personally, but my husband is mixed race. He's of Indian descent, and he has seen it quite a lot throughout his childhood and even today. Well, not today, literally.
No, I know what you mean, currently.
For example, in sort of the last few months, there was a colleague of his that was quite amicable up until he found out his Indian surname and has since started treating him really coldly, refuses to speak with him.
When you first started dating, so you're a white girl and your husband is mixed. So you first started dating the chap who was on to be a husband. What were the things you started to notice that make you think, whoa, God, I can't imagine someone would talk to my boyfriend like that?
I mean, I've always felt quite strongly about it anyway. So it's not like there's a lot that's really changed all that much since having been with him, except just hearing from his experiences about people in secondary school sort of adding the sort of the P word into his into his surname.
I see.
Just sort of making a joke about it, and then he managed to sort of reclaim that by a friend of his who was of similar ethnicity, just sort of making jokes about it and taking over, to which this other student really did not like, that he was taking it lightly.
The Home Secretary used the word regularly. She has to endure this regularly. So would you use that word, or is it occasionally? Is it often? How would you define it on the terms of your husband?
I don't think he's seen it as regularly, but he does notice it, and he doesn't feel comfortable with sort of the way things have been lately, particularly with partially his workplace, because of that one colleague. It just shows that is still prevalent. It is still quite common to see. And I think just with the sort of the situation in the country lately, he's just not really felt that safe.
When you say the situation, just expand a little. What do you mean by that?
I think sort of with all of the protests and the riots that have happened, it's sort of, living in Essex, seeing all the flags that have been put up all over the place, he just feels like suddenly he's not going to be welcome if he sort of, again, like to this other colleague, is exposed as being of a different ethnicity.
What does the government need to do, and possibly what does the local government need to do, local or central government need to do, faced with this?
More things need to be put in place. I think just trying to find a way.
What sort of things, Sian?
I'll admit, I don't really know the best way to explain it personally. So.
Okay. No. And lastly, again, I'm going to ask you, what's fueling this? Is the Home Secretary's determination to try and clamp down on these illegal arrivals on boats? What's your view of those people? Does there need to be some degree of control, or is the Home Secretary getting unnecessarily excited about something?
I think there does need to be a degree of control, a bit more. I don't really know much what I can say on it, but having seen the way that there's been that reception, it's definitely having more of an effect on people who were born and raised here. So I think that's a lot of where the issue comes in.
Will you give my best to your husband? Sian, thank you for sharing so much. Apologies to Leslie, to Beth and to Vicky and others. We're done for another day. If you missed the show, you can listen back on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. You can read and watch the latest from LBC, put your news categories in the order you want, pause and rewind live radio and listen to a range of podcasts. Download the all-new official LBC app for free from your app store now. I'm done. James O'Brien's the other side of the news on LBC. I'll be back with you tomorrow morning from 7. Meantime, stay safe.
Thank you, Nick. The time is approaching 10 o'clock, and there are two stories in the shallower end of the news today that may not necessarily strike you as linked, but that's how they struck me. If you are constrained by the regulations and requirements of society, what do you think might free you to discover the real you? If you're a woman, the argument is divorce, whereas if you're a man, taking up painting, singing or dancing is the answer to your problems. We may have a look at those. We may try and knit those two stories together. But we begin, perhaps, with the words of Harold Wilson. The Labour Party is a moral crusade, or it is nothing. I say, how very woke. Shabana Mahmood, we know a little bit more now about her plans. I wonder if it's changed your thoughts.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, the Home Secretary has insisted she won't have to U-turn on her asylum reforms despite growing unrest from Labour backbenchers.
I don't believe that will be the case because I think what we saw in the House was broad support from my colleagues across the Parliamentary Labour Party for these reforms, for the necessity of these reforms, for the substance of these reforms and for the absolute critical need to deliver for the British people.
Shabana Mahmood's told LBC she's not prepared to let issues with the UK's asylum system continue to fuel division. The sweeping changes include fast-tracking deportations and limits on appeals. Some Labour MPs have condemned the plans as cruel and dystopian. You can watch and read more of Shabana Mahmood's interview on lbc.co.uk. Sir Keir Starmer has warned rows over the Labour leadership are wasting time and detracting from the party's priorities. The Prime Minister says he will lead the party into the next general election despite speculation of a plot to replace him. Sir Keir says he's utterly focused on tackling the cost of living for families. Housing developments within 15-minute walks of a train station in England are going to receive a default yes under new planning rules. It's part of efforts to help meet Labour's promise of building 1.5 million new homes by the next election. Another proposal includes allowing ministers to intervene if local authorities intend to reject applications. Donald Trump has reiterated he'd sign a bill compelling the US government to release more files relating to Jeffrey Epstein. The US House of Representatives is due to consider the matter later. Democrats and some Republicans are expected to vote in favour of making the documents public. President Trump spoke to reporters about the issue in the Oval Office.
They can do whatever they want. We'll give them everything. Sure I would. Let the Senate look at it. Let anybody look at it. But don't talk about it too much because, honestly, I don't want to take it away from us. It's really a Democrat problem. The Democrats were Epstein's friends.
And the government's reportedly planning to ban the reselling of live event tickets for profit. Ministers are said to be drawing up proposals to outlaw sales above face value in a crackdown on touts. Labour's manifesto included a promise that would lead to an end of the practice. Reg Walker is a ticket fraud expert and says the issue spiralled out of control.
We've seen £70 tickets up for sale at 5, 6, 7 or sometimes 10 times face value depending on the act or the artist. I think it's fair to say we've lost the ability to sell tickets to genuine fans at face value. That's how bad it is.
In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 93 at 95.82. The pound buys $1.31 and a euro 13. LBC weather, a cold but dry day for many. Some outbreaks of rain for northwestern and southeastern areas with a high of 9 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
How would you describe McCain vibes?
I would reckon it's like a crisp and a chip. If they had a baby, do you know what I mean?
Well, you know what?
A chip. And a crisp.
Combination.
It's got crisp ancestry, but it's a chip.
Like a hot chip crisp combo thingy? Yeah? Pure poetry, that was.
McCain vibes. Our chip crisp combo hot snack thingies. In a freezer aisle near you.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Minutes after 10 is the time. A very good morning to you. It's a funny one, isn't it? It's not every day that we return to similar territory that we explored yesterday. But I think that when we are examining plans and then we, 24 hours later, in the position to examine actual statements and announcements, we are beholden to do so. I'd also like to say a quick word about this notion of surrender, if you don't mind. I think it's the right word. You may not like it, and you know me, I'm always open to persuasion that I should have a bit of a rethink. But I think the gig is up. Whether it should be or not is moot. But the idea that the conversation about small boat crossings and asylum seekers should not be dominating British political discourse because, well, off the top of my head, the cost of living, energy bills, water companies treating us like complete mugs, the NHS, the state of waiting lists, GPs, potholes, state of our roads. I could go on. All of the things that are measurably and obviously more important and should be exercising you and me a lot more than this issue. It hasn't worked. Oh, you know what I've just done, don't you? I just thought of, well, maybe that's the topic. Why hasn't it worked? Why does this rhetoric work so well for people who don't want you to be focusing upon the economic situation or the NHS situation or the, you name it situation? Why does it work so well? Why do people who are never going to be affected in any way, shape or form by the arrival of somebody from Afghanistan in a small boat, why do they think it is the single most important thing in the country at the moment? We will do that. Not immediately, because I do want to get stuck into Shabana Mahmood's stuff, but just in case, who was it the other day who accused me of having a scripted introduction? That was a brilliant piece of writing. Me and Keith put that together before the show. What I'll do, Keith, is I'll start talking about Shabana Mahmood, and then it will suddenly strike me that as we all sort of mourn the surrender, the rhetorical surrender or the conversational surrender to the idea that something that is not that important is the most important thing facing the country. And then I'll pretend it's just occurred to me that we could ask how that works and why we are a population that has allowed or been encouraged or ended up making that distinction, surrendering that high ground. Summed up best in that polling, I think I've mentioned it every morning for the last 3 or 4 days. You know, ask the people of this country what the most important issue facing the country is. They say immigration comes second. You ask them what the most important issue facing them is, immigration comes seventh. So yeah, we will. Will you remind me that we should get stuck into that question of why it works so well? Why people like me, the woke mob, the wokerati, the liberal elite, why it is so pointless to keep pointing at facts. I found the one I was looking for yesterday, and because you may not have believed me at the time. Compared with UK, with other European countries, okay, the UK received the fifth largest number of asylum seekers in the year ending March 2025. The fifth. So you could be forgiven for responding, well, say that's far too high. But of course, if you've got a brain, what you'll do is wonder how many people there are in this country and what the ratio is or what the per capita comparison may be when it's measured per head of population. What do you want to have a little guess at where we come on that list? If you're looking at asylum applications for the year ending March 2025, and you compare with other European countries, so only European countries, if we come fifth in terms of totals, but you break it down into per head of population, so it's the asylum application per head of population, where do you think we come? Where do you think we come? I don't think anyone will guess this correctly. I honestly don't. And it's part of the reason why this narrative of surrender is so compelling to me at the moment. It is extraordinary where we come on the list of per head of population application, asylum applications, because anywhere you go in the country, whether it is people that have fallen for the snake oil, fallen for the propaganda, or whether it is people who are dismayed by the success of the propaganda, everybody accepts that it's the biggest story in town. There's no pleasure for the umpteenth time in having told you that this was going to happen, having told you that if the newspapers insisted on inflating these balloons of bilious bigotry launched by Nigel Farage and his mates, then they will work. They do persuade populations. The cue for the ghost train. This is probably the oldest catchphrase on this program. And the program is now over 20 years old. The oldest catchphrase on this program. It's a lot easier to sell tickets for the ghost train than it is for your speak your weight machine. When you're in really tricky territory politically, I think, is when you get elected to sell tickets for the speak your weight machine and you end up selling tickets for the ghost train, which is all